This episode of Dead Pit is dedicated to the memory of Dan O'Bannon. Hello, folks, and welcome to the December 18th edition of Dead Pit Radio. I am the Creepy Kentuckian.
And I am Uncle Bill. Are you ready?
You know what, Uncle Bill? You know what? A lot of people haven't really realized this. 4 years ago today was the beginning of Dead Pit Radio.
It was the beginning of the end.
It's when the horror world got all shaken up like a little snow globe.
When we revolutionized horror radio forever, influenced,
invented it,
thousands of listeners, many of whom now create their own podcasts.
That's right.
But it all started here first.
It did, yeah. We started a good 4 years ago, like we were saying, in 2005, and it's actually a year we're going to cover in just a little bit because it is part two of our Decade in Review series. This is a series that will be ongoing for the next month or so. And we will do a year in review for 2009. It's all leading up to that. And then after that, I guess it's the Pity Awards.
That's right.
So we've got all kinds of things planned.
We've got some amazing things planned, though. But this is going to be 2003 through 2005. And when we get to 2005, like, I started to notice that because I guess we started the show, I'd seen almost every horror film that came out in 2005.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know that the first 3 years in 2000s actually contained quite a bit of decent movies.
It starts to go really downhill.
Yeah,
about
2003 to 2005.
Machete.
Yeah. But we're going to talk about each and every movie released. Well, not each and every, but we can't do that.
We're going to talk about every film that came out in 2000.
If we had the luxury of having a 15-hour radio show, we could probably do that. But I don't even know if I would want to do it or anybody would want to listen to it. So
No.
What we're going to do is go year to year. First up, of course, is 2003. But I definitely want to let everyone know, since this will be the last show we do before the new year, I want to wish everybody a Merry Christmas. I hope you get everything you wanted for Christmas. You know, I know Uncle Bill, he's got on Santa's lap. He wants the new, blow up doll of Antonio Banderas, the new model. You remember the one Cartman got years ago?
Yeah.
You want the new model because you like the old Antonio.
That's right. I'm going to take this time to say,
you're going to dress up like Meg Ryan. And
I want to wish you a Merry Christmas. We want to wish you a Merry Christmas.
Feliz Navidad. T-shirt Joe.
So here's a couple of things, though. Since we're not going to be doing the news portion of the program, thank God.
Yeah, like I was saying, 3 hours max. This is going to be like 3 hour plus show. I'm guaranteeing you that. Not over a certain time limit, though.
Stay tuned, though. Towards the end of the show, we've got a very special announcement about a future guest that's going to be coming up. Yep. And also, we've got DVD reviews, though, which we will be doing, which includes, of course, Stephen Romano's Shock Festival, which is a DVD and MP3 disc featuring all kinds of grindhouse trailers and radio spots and TV spots and such.
And our good buddy Robert Elkins asks us to go toe-to-toe with the Psychopath. And before we do the review of that a little bit later, we're going to debut the Psychopath theme song, which me and Uncle Bill have actually done that, I mean, we think it's a really innovative song that just sounds like it belongs in a slasher movie, right?
It does.
So Robert Elkins, you know, contacted us, wanted us to do this for the finished film. This, from what I understand, is going to be on the finished movie when it finally comes out to DVD. Lionsgate, I believe, is coming out with it. So it's a pretty big deal, Uncle Bill.
They hired us, and Santana is going to be doing the backing congas.
Tito Santana.
Not the band Santana. No. So keep all that in mind. We're going to go ahead and
Dive into this.
To the decade.
It's going to take a while. It's going to be a splendiferous good time.
So 2003, we're going to start off. Let me set the stage for you real quick. What was going on in 2003? Best Picture was Lord of the Rings. Everybody remembers that shit, The Return of the King. Sean Penn was the best actor for Mystic River. Monster came out. Charlize Theron was in that. So that's the stage. The stage is set. It was all about hobbits and Star Wars and bullshit like that. But the horror films...
And crack whores.
...were a different story.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we can go ahead and get started with a movie that just screams early 2000s to me. I saw part of the movie and I turned it off because it's fucking awful. It's Darkness Falls... directed by Jonathan Liebesman, who would later bring us the atrocity that was the Texas Chainsaw Massacre prequel, The Beginning.
Gee, John, thanks. This is the Tooth Fairy.
I'm scared of the Tooth Fairy.
This is the Tooth Fairy. You don't fuck with that.
You know, that's the thing. I mean, if you come out with a movie like about the Tooth Fairy in Eastern Kentucky, it's not going to scare anybody because a lot of these people haven't had their teeth in decades.
No. As a matter of fact, the legend is actually reversed around here. The Tooth Fairy brings you teeth.
Right.
You put a nickel under your pillow and the Tooth Fairy brings
you teeth. Yeah, that was the alternate Eastern, that was the Eastern Kentucky cut of the movie. Oh God, this Tooth Fairy's coming back to give me teeth, mama.
Oh God. After they brought it out from your ham sandwiches and your Mountain Dew and such.
Yeah, but just a complete waste of time. I remember this coming out, and it's a movie that made a ton of money when it came out for some goddamn reason. It was just really stupid. I don't know if you've ever, did you ever try to
watch
it?
I watched the whole thing. I can remember it, vaguely remember it.
Yeah.
It was just I don't even remember like that much about it other than the fact that I remember just being appalled by how bad it was.
It's bad. So. Darkness Falls, fuck
also,
it.
Though.
Violently.
Probably one of my favorite sequels that came out of the Knots came out in 2003, which was Final Destination 2.
Right.
I just thought this was a really, really good follow-up to Final Destination. It was a lot slicker, a lot more production value. And this was the one where the car crash is the setup for the people dying. Like in the first one, it was a plane crash. And this one, it's like a huge car pileup, and this girl sees it happen. And, of course, all the people that were supposed to be involved with car crash, who she saves, mm-hmm. end up getting killed in different ways. But it was one of the first times where I had seen somebody used CG and makeup effects together really, really well.
Right. Well, I think what made Final Destination 2 work was just the creative death scenes in it throughout. I mean, the original Final Destination, I think, had a creepy atmospheric vibe to it that none of the sequels or this remake or whatever came out this year have done correctly. They just couldn't do it. And in Final Destination 2, they didn't even try to do it. It was just like... Let's just think of some of the sickest shit we can do and see if we can get away with it with CG, which they actually do pretty well because, you know, a lot of CG is so bad because you see too much of it. Mm-hmm. It's on the screen for too long. And this one is really quick. A lot of death scenes. They just give you a brief glimpse into the terror and then they'll overdo it, I think. And that was what's so successful about FD2.
Love the way that they set up the big pile-up scene. It was so fast. It was edited so fast and close mm-hmm. together. Like, there were scenes where people were getting hit by cars, and, like, it would switch from that to, like, something exploding and then switch back to that.
It's very much like if Fast and the Furious was a fucking horror movie, that scene.
Yeah.
You know, that's how it was edited together. And it's a really good movie. Definitely better than the third one.
Yeah, it's like 1,000 times. I actually liked that the second one as much as I did the first one, even though I think you liked the first one better.
Well, the first one was just a different type of movie, I think, than the sequels. You know, the sequels just, you know, all insanity.
Crazy.
So, another one I guess we can talk about is another sequel. Victor Salva came out with this one. This is another one we're not big fans of. Just briefly go through it. Jeepers Creepers Part 2. And
you mean the movie that should have been called A Bunch of Dumbasses Stay on a Bus for an Hour and a Half?
Yeah.
I couldn't believe, could not believe when I saw that movie that it was even the same fucking premise as the first movie.
What's bizarre is
the same people were involved at all.
It's directed by the same guy, you know. And it's just, I don't know, I just think part of it is just a really quick cash in, because the original Jeepers Creepers made quite a bit of money, and this came out pretty quick after that, a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's probably what they were looking for with this, because there's really nothing to this movie. It's just stupid. It's like the South Park episode, but a lot worse.
It really is. Like, it's so completely unbelievable the way that it happens. And there's like a little backstory with a kid growing up and his dad like showing him what to do when this thing wakes up and all that is absolutely ridiculous as well. Mm-hmm. So just a bad movie.
Yep.
We won't go into the beginning of the end yet. Let's actually stay on a positive note here. We saw this movie in the theaters, Freddy vs. Jason.
Hmm. Yeah, Freddy vs. Jason, I want to be quite honest with you. I loved that movie when I first saw it in theaters. I thought it was a fun movie, just sort of like a roller coaster ride. But a lot of that was just the atmosphere of seeing it in the movie theater, especially when I saw it on DVD for the first time. I was like, well, what the hell? I mean, that wasn't nearly as good as I remember it being. But I think it's one of those films that it's just a hokey good time. It's really, I don't put it in with either franchise. It's just one of those movies that was just something they had to do at some point in time. And to be fair, I mean, a lot of people rag on Ken Kersinger. Yeah, he's a big tall motherfucker. It just stands there and doesn't do much. But at the same time, I mean, I think a lot of the blame should go with the director, Ronnie Yee.
Right.
For wanting a big motherfucker, because I think the whole, his whole explanation on that choice was Freddy was going to be the smart one. He was going to be, the one saying all the lines and all this. Jason had to have something on him, so he had to tower over him. He had to be a giant, which is stupid. Kane Hodder, although I'm sure the majority of the people didn't even know who the fuck Kane Hodder was, that guy championed that role for the Freddy vs. Jason movie. He deserved it. I think it's bullshit that Lionsgate didn't say, no, Kane is Jason for at least this movie. After that, do what you want, but I think that he deserved to play the role because he had played Jason for the past 10 years or so.
I'm always amazed when I watch this movie, though, that it went through dozens of scripts. Because that's by far the weakest part of the movie is the writing and the script. It's like, it's by the time you get to the end, you have no fucking idea what's going on or like what the purpose of what you watch like the first hour is. So here's the thing. If you can turn your mind off and just concentrate on the action sequence and the fights between, especially between Freddy and Jason towards the end, it's actually a pretty entertaining movie. If there's one thing I'll say about Ronnie Yee, he can construct an action sequence. And so,
yeah, I mean, and the thing is with the script, you mentioned it was hard to believe that they went through a script that many times. Seriously, though, I mean, it would be a difficult script to come up with something that would be actually good, if you think about it, because you got to explain, you know, how this all comes to be. And how they explain it is ridiculous, okay? It is flat-out ridiculous how they explain it in the movie. But, I mean, it's a difficult thing to do because you've got two completely different characters that are really in two... I mean, I know a lot of people say that Nightmare on Elm Street's sort of a slasher film. I don't really see it as that, though. I mean, for me, I think Freddy's more like a monster. And it's just two different types of genres that you have to tell a story that sort of makes sense and involving those two characters and have the common moviegoer know what the hell is going on.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of hard.
I don't think anybody knew what was going on by the end of that movie, though.
Probably not. But, I mean, that's the thing. That's the difficult thing about it. But, you know, Freddy versus Jason, it was a gimmick movie. It made a ton of money. It deserved to make a ton of money. I have no complaints with it anymore. Maybe I did it in the past, but, I mean, it was like, yeah, what, whatever. It was a fun time in the theater. I'll never forget when we saw it in the movie theater.
It was completely full. The theater was completely packed.
It was a great time. And, you know, probably the most entertaining time I've had in the theater that year, at least. I would say that.
Okay.
So the next one, let's go ahead and talk about this one. I don't know what you think of this movie. Glenn Morgan, who I believe was involved in X-Files, right?
He was, yeah.
Directed the Willard remake. And I don't know if you've ever seen
it. I've never seen the Willard remake.
With Crispin Glover. And I just want to briefly mention, I did watch it. I've got it on DVD. It's actually pretty damn good. I mean, I haven't seen the original Willard. But Crispin Glover is the perfect choice to play that character. And, you know, I mean, he's sort of just an outcast that, as I remember, I think he gets fired from his job and he has a pet rat named Willard that, you know, he speaks to and just, he goes fucking insane, basically.
And Crispin Glover looks like a guy that would have a pet rat that he would talk to.
I think
to.
He does have he used his real pet rat.
That doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, but as I remember, I believe he goes completely insane and on a killing spree after getting some advice from his rat or something like that. It's actually, I actually enjoyed the movie quite a bit. As far as remakes go, like I said, I'm not familiar with the original Willard, but I thought it was a well-done movie, and Crispin Glover, like I was saying, perfect choice for the character.
Well, here's one that I don't know if you've seen or not that came out that year. Did you ever see Dreamcatcher?
I tried.
Yeah.
I tried to watch.
See, the weird thing about Dreamcatcher is...
First part of it's good.
The first part of it's awesome. Like, it's one of those, like, Stephen King Stand By Me-ish kind of stories where you go back into people's childhood and you see, like, what happened, that you know, as they kind of band together and what made them into what they are now. And it's the story of a guy that has certain, like, psychic abilities, or one of the kids actually has psychic abilities, and they're all connected by this. And there's a spaceship crash out somewhere, and it connects with all of the characters in a way towards the end. The problem is, like, towards the latter half of the movie,
you start getting into the climax.
Yeah, they bring Morgan Freeman in, and he's like with the army, and there's all this shit that just completely ruins the entire
feel. I think what ruined it is they stayed true to the book. They didn't really want to change anything.
Well, even if that's
true,
from
what I've heard, yeah.
It just, the tone of the movie and everything changes towards the end. Like, everything that was built on at the beginning of the movie, with some wonderful acting by a bunch of people that I don't even fucking know. I mean, I can see the guy that's the lead guy in my head, but I cannot remember his name.
I don't remember anybody in it aside from Morgan Freeman.
But, yeah, with some great acting and some really good scenes, but just, they just blow it.
Yeah, it was one of those rare movies that, like I said, I saw it probably right when it came out, or we rented the DVD or something like that, and watched it, and I was like, oh my God, I can't believe nobody's mentioned this. I haven't heard much about it. And then about half an hour, 45 minutes into it, I just wanted to turn it off because it's stupid. It just turned, like, it went from something to being really cool, like a, you know, coming of age sort of story evolving into, you know, these guys currently, what they're doing. And then it just, I don't know, it's a lot, it's kind of like the thing, It as well.
Yeah.
A little bit.
It is.
Just a little bit. But another one we could mention that actually originally came out in 2003 in France and is definitely one of my favorite movies. I know we've given the director a hard time over the last few years. Would be High Tension. And this is a movie that I don't think we've really talked about a whole lot on Dead Pit, but looking back at it and looking at the movies we've watched in theaters over the past 10 years, I would say that the most surreal movie I've ever seen in a theater in that time would be High Tension.
Yeah. I actually think that this is the movie that when we went to see this in the theater.
And it was in Pottsville. It was a limited theatrical run. For some fucking reason, it was on at Pottsville. I cannot
I think there was like two other people besides us. And it was like the smallest theater in the place. But I think this had the most impact on, like, getting back into horror. I think this is the movie that made me understand that people could still make horror movies like they were once made and could still make, like, suspenseful horror films. And so, really, this movie is probably responsible more so than any other movie for everything that's going on now with, like, Dead Pit and everything else, because I think it had an impact on both of us.
Yeah, I mean, I think, I don't know if it was used, I'm pretty sure it wasn't used in the documentary, but I was standing in front of the movie theater, and Kelly told me, or asked me, like, what was your favorite movie you've ever seen here? And I told him High Tension, because we were just totally out of the loop. We didn't know what the fuck the movie was. I was like, well, I knew there was a lot of buzz about the movie, because I glance at reviews at the star ratings and stuff like that. I don't read them. So I'm like, let's go fucking see it. I mean, we haven't seen a movie in the theater in a while. And like you were saying, there's like two or three other people in the theater. It was the smallest theater in the place, three or four rows. And then all this shit came on the screen. It was just really effective. And, you know, Alex Aja has made probably quality decisions when it comes to making money. I just wish the guy would actually, you know, get behind one of his own projects completely on his own and get like a Lionsgate or somebody like that to put it out.
Yeah, he's making the Piranha remake, though.
That's true.
It's in 3D.
Yeah, I'm not really pleased at the last batch of all remakes, actually. All three of the movies he's made since then have been remakes.
He's going to make the Munchies remake in 3D next.
oh, my God!
Yeah, so that, I can't say enough good things about High Tension. People want to talk about the ending, what the fuck ever. You can talk about the ending all you want to.
Fuck you.
I like the ending. So there, I said it. Let's talk about the beginning of, this to me is like the beginning of the end, because we were really excited to see this movie, actually, when it came out. But I don't think we had any idea about, like, remakes, like the trend of remakes that would come after this, and just how bad they would all be. And that's the Texas Chainsaw Massacre remake.
Yeah.
And I can remember vividly watching this movie and just fucking being depressed. And by the end of it, you're just so depressed and so feel like you've been so cheated by the movie.
I just can't, you know, there's a few mysteries in life to me, and it just mystifies me, literally, how this movie, like, a few people say it's one of their favorite remakes. Why? What the hell goes on in it that's entertaining at all? Like, I remember going to the movie theater and watching this, and I never got into it at all. Like, not even, you know, I can say for a few of these movies, like, I'll even admit it. I got into the first 15, 20 minutes of Rob Zombie's Halloween. I can't even say this. Can't even say that about that Texas Chainsaw Massacre remake. It was one of those movies, as soon as I sat down, as soon as I started watching, I was like, God, this is really bad.
Yeah, I think what made it worse is, I think within a span of about, had to be a week or 2 weeks or something, we saw this and House of a Thousand Corpses. Like, it was right back to back. And I can't even describe, like, I think I might have hated House of a Thousand Corpses worse then than I actually hated the Chainsaw Massacre remake. It was just, it was like a 1-2 punch of just bad filmmaking. Just the way that they were lit was exactly the same. They all had that pissed on quality, that kind of like burnt yellow-ish quality.
Yeah.
They were both like retro, trying to be like all retro 70s style that would come into play so much with, you know, Rob Zombie and, well, a lot of people's films after Saw. I hated the look of both of them.
The Abercrombie and Fitch actors and actresses they brought in.
Yeah. And so I can remember, like, really thought this was going to be the end. It was so discouraging.
Another thing, too, is like, you take all of the classic, you know, you got Grandpa, you've got the cook, Leatherface, of course, the hitchhiker, and the people, the fucking family they have in this. You got the lady with the baby. It looks like Rachel Dratch's inbred character from Saturday Night Live. You've got that big fat fucking lady. What was her name? The tea lady, or something like that. You've got this old grandma looking motherfucker. You've got this dude that doesn't have any legs in a wheelchair. It's like just character after character that nobody gives a shit about. They're not scary looking. They look stupid.
When I was watching that movie, though, I was thinking to myself, I really have to know how it is that that old fart in that wheelchair lost his legs. But luckily, with the prequel, we got to find out.
Yeah, we'll be talking about the prequel in a future show.
Yeah.
But bottom line is, if somebody, and this is the way I look at it, and this is the way everyone should look at it, but the studios aren't because they're making their money this way. If you're going to make a remake, it better be more effective, or you need to attempt to make it more effective. You need to not just throw all these fuck more characters and characters on just for the hell of it. You know, there is nothing, I mean, this is just, I don't know. I'll never get it. I'm just going to give up on trying to even figure it out why people like this movie.
You know the best part about that movie, though?
The ending.
Besides that, is Jessica Biel running around in that cut off fucking t-shirt. That's the only part of that movie that I remember liking.
So.
Okay, anyway. Yeah, you're up.
What up? Let's see. Well, we might as well talk about House of a Thousand Corpses since we watched them back to back. You know, we just watched House of a Thousand Corpses again not too long ago on Blu-ray. And I gotta say, the movie's actually, I warmed up to the movie quite a bit since I first saw it in theaters. Now the ending, probably the last 15, 20 minutes of the movie still is a clusterfuck. And I think Rob Zombie even admits to that he really didn't know what he was doing.
Yeah. He even admitted he just threw money
at
it after a while trying to fix it.
But I think the visuals in the movie, you can't deny that. I mean, it was really well shot, well put together. I think the cast was perfect in this movie.
I think the opening scene of that movie, it was, I mean, that scene, you really think, wow, you're really in for something. Like, it's going to be completely unique and just innovative and something that you've never, ever seen before. And just the way that it opened, it really, like, going back and watching it now, I really liked that whole sequence. But unfortunately, the film never pays off to that sequence. It never really, like, lives up to the opening titles and the stuff with Captain Spaulding and all that, because he really is, like, the best thing about that movie.
Yeah, and he's barely in the movie.
Yeah. So, unfortunately, and it, don't get me wrong, the film does have some really effective scenes. I think the scene where Otis shoots the cop and it, like, goes on forever and ever, I think that's, like, a really, really good scene. I've never really seen
anybody do that. What was the song they play as right before, he shoots the cop,
yeah,
I'll Remember You or something like that.
Yeah.
That was awesome, the way they put that together. And there was, like, a really long pause before he actually shot the cop. Really good. Actually, and the Blu-ray, we never did talk about this. If you have that Blu-ray player, the House of Thousand Corpses Blu-ray is fucking amazing. I mean, as far as, I never realized how well shot that movie was until you see it in HD.
Yeah. I mean, I think I like the movie a lot more now than when we actually saw it in 2003, because that was one of the movies where I was just pissed. Like, I was pissed about having to sit through it. I was pissed about, like, I think it was in large part, too, due to the hype that was built up around it.
Yeah, I mean, this is another movie. This was made 3 years before it came out. You know, so the hype machine was running wild with this one. So, but House of Thousand Corpses, it's not that bad.
So moving on, we've got really briefly talk about House of the Dead, which was really my introduction to Uwe.
And it still probably is Uwe Boll's best movie.
Yeah, it is. I really think it is. That's sad, but that was my introduction to the world and the filmmaking of Das Wonder Kid.
Yeah.
Uwe Boll.
I don't know.
Geo.
I saw the movie right when it came out. I don't remember it too much. I just remember there's like, they always go back to the shots of the video game in between the live action.
When somebody gets killed,
yeah,
they go back and like show somebody getting killed in the video game. Yeah, just, if you ever want to see a movie that's just like the ultimate attempt to cash in on a product other than The Wizard, You need to check out House
of the
Dead.
But the Wizard is great.
Yeah, the Wizard is a lot better, though. Because it is really a generic movie, but it goes and references the video game so much and so blatantly that you almost have to laugh your way through it. Yeah. I mean, that's the only thing I can say.
One that I want to briefly mention on here, just because it was another one that was just like, well, we can do this. Let's go ahead and do it just so we can get some money out there. And that's Beyond Reanimator. Brian Usna made the movie, which was a direct-to-sci-fi movie when it came out.
Now, that's the prison one, right? That's the one where he's in...
That's the last one they did. I never have seen it.
Okay.
But I don't think I've ever seen a positive review for the movie, so I never did have the inkling to watch it.
I guess another couple we could talk about. I don't think, I've seen this one. I don't think you have. Toolbox Murders. Toby Hooper.
I've seen that. It's $5 though at Walmart.
Wow. Really horrible movie. Unlike,
yeah, but the majority of people like it that have seen it.
I haven't seen that. I've got a thread up on the board right now that says rate Toby Hooper's movies, and like almost everybody rates it a 2 or a 3 out of 10.
Well, a lot of the people though that I've heard from usually, I mean, a few people, I don't say a lot, but.
Yeah, watch it for yourself and see what you think. But it's got Angela Bettis in it, so one of the only films I can think of that actually has her in it that's not associated with Lucky McKee. And I believe it has Sherry Moon Zombie in the beginning. She's one of the victims.
What about Zombiegeddon? That came out in 2000.
Did Zombiegeddon? Now that's a trauma film. That came out through trauma.
I guess, yeah. It's like one of those movies where they just stack people, like independent people, on the cover, and then they're in it for like 2 seconds.
Yeah, like Linnea Quigley is a principal. She plays it for like literally 30 seconds. I think Robert Zadar's in it for like a minute. There's like all kinds of people.
Tom Savini's in the opening segment.
Yeah, that are in it for like 30 seconds. It's just the ultimate attempt to cash in on nerdy, like, fan stuff. Like people that want to see those guys do something else. So, yeah, other than Zombiegeddon, though, you've got Wrong Turn, which we saw in theaters as well, which is actually a underrated slasher classic, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Well, hell, it's got Elijah Dushku in it, motherfucker.
Yeah. Did you always thought that Elijah Dushku cannot keep a TV series on to save her life?
She's got Dollhouse on now.
No, they already canceled that.
Oh, poor Eliza.
Get off it!
Come here to Princeton's book. I'll console you.
Give me a hug.
This movie, though, aside from Elijah Dushku, you also had, I can't remember her name. I think it was Lindy Booth or something like that. She was in it. Redhead, really good looking. Also in, like, another movie.
Oh, Lindy.
About. Yeah. Lindy or something like that. And the other girl's Emmanuel Schwieke or Schwieke or something like that. You know what I'm talking about.
La,
I think she was in That 70s Show.
Oh, yes. It was also the birth of Three Finger and all the cannibal mountain gods.
The funny thing is, though, they never called him Three Finger in the first two movies.
Not until later on he became synonymous with that. I thought it was a good slasher film, though. It was very reminiscent of the backwoods slashers of the 80s and inbred slashers.
It was well shot as well. Like a lot of the slasher directors back in the day... James Bryan and Don Jones, they also worked on nature films and stuff, so they had like a good background for just shooting, you know, the forest. And I don't think Wrong Turn, Rob Schmidt had that kind of background, but I mean, I think he did the genre justice.
Yeah, we've actually interviewed him, although it's been quite a while. You can go back and check that out right now.
It's probably been, like, what, 2 years ago at least?
Yeah.
But
I think he was having dinner in a Mexican restaurant.
Yeah, Anyway, we're going to take a break, but when we get back, we're going to go through 2004 and 2005.
Woo!
After Beck.
To the future.
Hello, everyone. I'm Adam, and you're listening to Beck to the Future. This week, back in 1959, Universal Studios released the Hammer Films production of The Mummy, starring Christopher Lee and the late, great Peter Cushing. I saw this film years back as a youngster, and overall, I thought it was much better than the original Mummy, starring Boris Karloff.
You pig cunt. You want my fat cock too.
Oh, why don't you go find a wall socket and stick your tongue in it? That'll give you a charge.
I'll stick my tongue up your pretty pussy.
You fucking creep!
Just in time for the holidays in 1974, we saw the release of Bob Clark's classic, Black Christmas, distributed by Warner Brothers.
Well, Super Tongue strikes again. Fastest tongue in the West.
Supposedly the inspiration behind John Carpenter's Halloween, although Carpenter completely denied it during his interview with Deadpit back in 2007, Black Christmas is a fantastic horror film, which I just recently discovered a few years back. In 1976, Paramount released the remake of King Kong, starring Jeff Bridges, who looked a hell of a lot like his character, the Dude, from The Big Lebowski.
I'm the Dude, so that's what you call me, you know? His dudeness, or Duder, or...
The film opened in 974 theaters, coming in number one at the box office, taking in over $7 million. In 1978, United Artists released Philip Kaufman's remake of Invasion of the Body Snatchers. The film opened in 445 theaters and debuted number one at the box office, taking in over $1.2 million. I just recently watched this for the first time a few months back, based on a strong recommendation from my buddy Schlogs. I thought this movie was awesome, definitely worth checking out if you haven't seen it. In 1981, Universal Studios released Ghost Story, starring a bunch of old-timers, Fred Astaire and Douglas Fairbanks Jr. The film opened number 5 at the weekend box office, debuting in 548 theaters and taking in $2.1 million. In 1986, De Laurentiis Entertainment Group released the sequel to Paramount's 1976 King Kong film. This one, titled King Kong Lives, was released in 1,105 theaters and opened a disappointing 12th place at the weekend box office, taking in just over $1.1 million. And also this very same weekend, Warner Brothers released the horror musical Little Shop of Horrors, starring Rick Moranis and directed by Frank Oz. Playing in 866 theaters, the film opened number 4 at the weekend box office, taking in $3.6 million. In 1991, New Line Cinema released Alligator 2, The Mutation on VHS. In 1996, Dimension Films released Wes Craven's slasher film, Scream, in 1,413 theaters, opening number 4 at the weekend box office, taking in $6.3 million. The film would go on to gross over $103 million in the United States, becoming one of the highest grossing films of all time for Dimension Films. In 2005, Universal released yet another remake of King Kong, this time directed by Peter Jackson. The film opened number 1 at the box office, taking in over $50 million its opening weekend. Due to its enormous budget, it took over 16 weeks being in theaters before the film managed to recoup the $200 million spent on production costs. Luckily for Universal Studios, the film did much better overseas, taking in an additional $332 million, making the film rather profitable. In 2006, we saw the DVD release of Altered, which was directed by Blair Witch Project writer-director Eduardo Sanchez. In 2007, we saw the DVD release of Adam Green's overhyped turd, known as Hatchet. And also in 2007, Warner Brothers released I Am Legend, starring Will Smith. The film opened in 3,606 theaters, coming in number 1 at the box office, taking in $77.2 million. This is one of those films that had a lot of potential, but was ultimately ruined by honestly some of the worst CGI I've ever seen in a theatrical film. Anyway, I'm Adam Beck, and this has been Beck to the Future for the week of December 14th.
And welcome back here to Deadpit Radio.
Hi.
This is, of course, the big Decade in Review show, and we're on 2004
now.
Do not four. Here we go. So, just to set the scene a little bit. This was the year that Clint Eastwood basically swept everything for Million Dollar Baby. I mean, we're talking best director, best picture. Hilary Swank was the best actress, and the best supporting actor was Morgan Freeman. So it was all about that movie.
Million Dollar Baby was all right, but it wasn't one of my favorites.
But it was all about it, though. It was about it.
Also, though, that year was the year we went to our very first horror convention.
The Horrifying 2004 Spectacular.
I'll never forget it, Uncle Billy. It was a glorious time.
I couldn't believe that you could walk into a place and there would be like everybody you'd watched for years from horror movies would just be sitting there and you could interact with them and pay them money. I couldn't believe that either.
Yeah, I couldn't either.
I still can't really believe
it. I've got a little bit used to that, though.
Give me money. Give me $20.
Give me money. I'm slamming lime on your shit.
Give me $20.
That's how it works. Shut up.
Okay, so let's talk about, though, the horror films of that year. Starting with
2004 one. 2004 sucked.
It did. Well, all these years really weren't that great, but I can tell you the one that surprised me the most from anything in 2004, because I thought for sure it was going to be an epic failure, but it was not, is the Dawn of the Dead remake.
Yeah. Yeah, this movie, a lot of people shit on it, though, still. I mean, I don't know if they're just so hardcore into the original Dawn of the Dead, which, I mean, you're pretty hardcore into the movie, and you liked it. It's just, it's a different sort of movie. It's not exactly like Dawn of the Dead from 78, but it's fun. I mean, there's some stuff in it that's not so good. The CGI baby is kind of crappy. But ultimately, it's not that bad of a movie. I don't even know if it's really a horror movie that much. But it's, I think it's fun. I mean, Zack Snyder, he went on to do 300 and Watchmen and stuff like that. So he's definitely made a career out of, the action. And this is really, I think, more of an action movie than a horror movie.
It's completely different type of film than the original Dawn of the Dead, which is why, by the way, it works. If they had tried to do like a lot of the other idiots had done and try to make like a shot-by-shot, you know, remake or a remake that stays like true to the storyline, it would have been horrible. But luckily, he didn't try to do that. He tried to do his own film.
And something else that was cool about the movie, too, is you had cameos from some of the folks in the original movie. You know, I think Scott Reiniger, Ken Foree, and Tom Savini.
The only one that wasn't there, I think, was Galen Ross. And
yeah, but they still found a way to, I think if you look, you can see Galen Ross, a sign or something that says Galen Ross in one of the stores. So, you know, it was an homage to the original movie, and it was something completely different than the original movie, other than the main concept that they're in a mall and there's the undead outside.
Right. Plus, I mean, this was really the reintroduction of fast zombies, I guess. Like the big, this kind of helped to kickstart the fast zombie craze.
Right.
That was going.
But to move on a little bit, let's talk about a movie that Greg Kinnear and Rebecca Romijn was in. I saw this movie right when it came out. Godsend. Have you ever seen this?
Godsend. I don't think so.
Well, I think Robert De Niro is a scientist who,
right there, it's
genetically,
you know, it's not believable. Yeah,
through science, gives Greg Kinnear and Rebecca Romijn a son, and of course, the son is evil. Grows up to be evil. Well, it doesn't grow up. He's a little kid. They fast forward about 7 or 8 years. He's an evil little fucker, and I actually like movies like this usually, but this one was just retarded.
I'm making evil babies over here.
Yeah, because I think
I'm making evil babies.
It's one of those that De Niro sort of turns heel and he had an evil plan all along sort of deals. Yeah.
Want to give you a kid?
I think I have Godsend, so I might have to watch it again. I don't remember a whole lot from it.
I love
just
the plot
really
of that.
Bad.
Just sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Here's one that I've seen. I don't know if you've seen, though. Did you ever see The Forgotten that came out with Julianne Moore?
I saw it right when it came to DVD, I think. It's
not a spectacular movie by any stretch of the imagination, but I thought it was at least a good movie.
It's another one, though, that, like, there's a twist ending in it, and it just gets so lame you don't even give a fuck about the twist ending anymore. Like, there's so many little twists and turns along the way, you're like, God, just unveil it. Who gives a shit?
I guess it's like a pseudo alien abduction movie, though. If you really want to look at it that way.
Julianne Moore hasn't been in too many movies worth a fuck, though. Have you noticed that?
She was in Boogie Nights, which I like. I thought that was a good movie. She was in, a lot of people don't like Hannibal. I guess it is probably the weakest of the series. Yep. But, yeah, she hadn't really been in a whole lot other than that.
She was in, I'm thinking of, I get her and Kate Blanchett mixed up quite a bit for some reason.
That'd be easy to do.
I was like, yeah, she was in The Gift. No, not sure what. Let's talk about one, though, from our buddy Rolf Konevsky. Came out this year, or that year. The Hazing, which Nectar Rose, baby. Yeah, I'd like to get some nectar from that rose.
Whatever happened to her?
And I know she was in Angela Bettis, Lucky McKee
Roman
movie. That was the last movie I saw her in. Yeah. Tiffany Shepis, of course, was also in this. This is basically a remake to Night of the Demons.
Yeah, they don't really need to remake Night of the Demons right now because they've already got one.
Tiffany Shep has been in two remakes for Night of the Demons.
She had a lot of experience in this role, this type of role. It was a good movie, though. It wasn't...
Independent movie, direct to DVD. I think Rolf Kineski's one of those guys, though, that could easily make a big-budget movie if someone would give him the chance to do it. You know?
Give him half a chance, folks. Give him half a chance.
Yeah.
They're just afraid of him because his name's Rolf.
We were to make a music video, call it We Believe, and it'd just be about Rolf Kineski.
How about this? We make a music video called All We Are Saying, Give Rolf Kineski a Chance.
All we are,
give Rolf Kineski a chance. Just do it, though. Okay. Haven't seen this one either. The Exorcist, The Beginning. I hear it's wonderful, though.
Rennie Harlan, boy. Right. Fucking Rennie Harlan. What more do you need to know? I know that there's another movie, and we might as well mention this because I don't want to mention it again in 2005. They released the original film, which I think, what was the Schrader guy? Paul Schrader, I think, was his name.
Not sure.
The original cut of the movie Dominion. Yeah, Paul Schrader. And, from what I understand, they both pretty much suck. So,
That's just two movies I've never really wanted to see. So,
yeah.
I just didn't.
Well, I know they delayed the movie forever because the movie originally was supposed to come out around the time they released the remastered version you've never seen of The Exorcist, like 2001, something like that. So, another one, though, that we got to mention, although I don't really want to talk about it too much, that would be Seed of Chucky.
I actually went back and watched this movie about 6 or 7 months ago because I bought the Chucky pack that had all the
I had the HD DVD version.
You either get
it's kind of shitty.
You either get this movie or you don't, though, because it was really like the most blatant attempt to make a humorous Chucky movie, if you can believe that. It's really kind of silly. It's like a comedy more than it is a horror film.
Yeah, but it's still not that good.
Where like Chucky and the doll Tiffany have a baby, and it's the Seed of Chucky, and it's this little like British,
that's the funniest thing.
Doll.
What was his name in it? I don't remember the name.
Damn, I can't.
Something
remember.
Like Herman or something like that.
I cannot remember.
But the guy that was in Lord of the Rings did the voice, the little Hobbit guy, and that worked fucking perfect. I mean, I will say that was sort of funny, but I just hate Red Man. I cannot stand watching that guy, and he's in the majority of the movie, and Boyd was the guy that did
the voice. It's like a coming-of-age movie about this little doll that's trying to figure out more about his dad and, like, why it is that he has this lust to murder and all this shit. You're right, it's not very good, but it is completely unique, I'll say that.
No.
So, let's see.
Let's move on, Wood, then.
Probably a film that grew on me more than any other film that came out or in the 2000s. Shaun of the Dead, which we actually saw in the theater. And I remember, like, after we saw it in the theater, I didn't like it very much coming out of the theater. To be completely honest, I really didn't. I didn't get it. I was looking for something to be more like a straight Romero movie or something like that, and it's very British comedy centered.
Yeah, pretty much a horror movie if the Monty Python guys ever made a horror movie. It's got a lot of stuff like that in it, which is why I like Shaun of the Dead. It's got some funny stuff in it. I think the characters are great in it. And there's a lot of cool things in it that you'll go back and rewatch and discover again. You know, just because
that's the thing.
Edgar Wright, I mean, he's just a really intelligent bloke.
I think I've gone back and watched this movie more times now than any of the other horror films that came out in the 2000s just because after you watch it, and I'll say this is the same for Hot Fuzz, too. After you watch it, you'll miss like 90% of the references and stuff that are in the movie. The more times you go back and watch it, the more stuff you pick up on. It actually becomes more enjoyable to watch these films over and over again than it does when you first see them. So I would actually put it in like the top five films of the noughts.
Yeah, Shaun of the Dead's pretty good. Yeah, I would say it needed more gore, though, if anything. I mean, the movie wasn't, and that's probably not their fault. I mean, maybe there's a unrated version out there, but I would have preferred more gore in the movie.
They're British, so they're not allowed to do that. They're too proper.
Next one is probably the most, I would say by far, most successful franchise of the Knots began with James Wan in 2004 when they released Saw, which originally was like this direct-to-DVD project that cost like something like $1.5 million or something like that to make. And this movie made a flat-out fortune. And they're still to this day, every year in October, releasing the next Saw movie. Every year. They haven't skipped a year since. So, but it all began, of course, with the original, which starred Danny Glover, Cary Elwes, and Lee Whannell, who's also the writer of the original movie. And
it's like if you take the game Mousetrap and translate that into a horror film, and you have the whole plot behind Saw.
Well,
it's like we're going to come up with all these different games and all these different things that you have to figure out in order to get yourself out of this, but you have to sacrifice certain things in order to, you know, to get free. And I'm not going to bullshit. Like, the first time I saw this movie, it blew me away because I completely, 100% did not see the ending of the film coming.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think, you would almost have to be a genius to see the ending of the film coming because it just, I don't think anybody ever done anything like that in a movie to that point where, not to give it away, but it's right in front of your face the whole time, so you just don't even really think about it.
Yeah, but ultimately, though, I mean, yeah, it's a major unveiling, but at the same time, ultimately, that guy's just fucking been laying there still for 5 hours or something, and it's kind of stupid. I'm just laying here, I'm playing these games. I mean, it's like, ultimately, after you see it one time, you're like, well, what the hell? Who cares?
Yeah.
I don't know. I saw Saw once. I've never had the desire to go back and watch it in 5 years. And even though I do have a copy of it, but I don't know. There's just certain types of movies like this, the brutal movies, the 100% super serious horror films, that, I just don't get much out of them, really. I mean, I'm not going to say, like, you know, people say some of the all-time classics, you know, Texas Chainsaw, stuff like that. But to me, I mean, these Saw movies are just they sort of draw the lowest common denominator when it comes to people in general. Like, that's the reason these were so successful is you had a lot of teenagers go into these movies just wanting to see insanity, you know, wanting to see guts and just tendons being cut open and stuff like that. I don't give a fuck about a story because there's not a story in any of these movies, especially like the, you know, when the sequels move onward.
Well, I disagree. I think there's way too much fucking story in these movies because as the films went on,
well, there's
basically had to, like, you know.
Yeah, there's a lot of people you have to follow and shit like that, but as far as the actual moving narrative,
well, here's what happened. I think that after the first Saw, and I really like Saw, and I really like Saw 2, but what they did was they took the basic thing out of the movie that everybody seemed to, like, get, that all the teeny bopper fans and stuff like that seemed to enjoy, which was the traps. And that was the basis for all the rest of the movies. Like, that was all. They concentrated on that completely. Like, every other film was just, okay, what's the next kind of trap that they're going to set up? How they're going to kill somebody by the trap in the next ones? And that's continued on until today, really. I mean, there's been no attempt. After the second film, which was a big revelation at the end of the second film, after that, like, they've been having revelations after fucking revelations of just people you don't even know who they are, but it's a revelation that they're in. Like, there's somebody's uncle that came, like,
from part three.
Yeah, somebody. It's just ridiculous at this point.
Yeah.
Nobody gives a shit about the story now because it's just about the traps. That's it.
Well, there is no story. I mean, there might be, like I was saying, there's characters, but ultimately there's no fucking story to it. So, I guess that, do you have any more from 2005? I mean, I've got a few small ones from 2004.
The Grudge.
Oh, God. I don't even know what to say. It's just bad.
Only thing I remember Sarah Michelle Gellar, hands coming out of the back of her head, Asian. I'll never watch it again either. A lot of people seem to like it. I have no idea why. That's about it.
Yeah, I didn't care too much for it.
Murder Set Pieces came out that year, too.
Yeah. Murder Set Pieces just...
Woo.
Yeah, I kind of appreciate what he was trying to do with that, but I just think that ultimately Nick Palumbo just crossed the line a few ways. It's really sort of unforgivable, and I think we've sort of talked about that before.
He's like one of the filmmakers in a long line of filmmakers who just could not hold his shit together. Like, there's some people that I guess because of the fact they're artists and they're controversial, that seeps over into the personal aspects of their life. I mean, the guy is notorious for just going, like, crazy on people and bad-mouthing people, and he's got a really bad reputation.
I think he's got a really bad attitude, too, because if anybody tries to take him to task for some of the things that's in his movies, you know, he automatically just personally attacks them. It doesn't matter if he agrees with them or not, or he disagrees with them. He doesn't try to articulate himself.
Like we do.
Yeah. And explain why he thinks they're wrong. He's just like, oh, you're a whore. Everyone knows you're fucking being pimped for the first 15 years of your life. You suck, you know, 10 dozen AIDS-infested dicks.
He's like Harry Russo in the Schizophreniac movies. You're a fucking whore. You whole bastard.
I think ultimately that's why you don't see many movies from him anymore, and probably won't.
No. That's the sad thing, too, is he actually had a lot of potential in making those type of movies. It's just that he's burned so many bridges by being the way that he is that he probably will never have another chance to make a film like that.
Yeah. But another one, though, that I wanted to mention that I'm guessing it's out, but it was one of the first movies we ever reviewed on Dead Pit, and it's Hell Hath No Fury. With Torch. Ryan Nicholson did this film. And it's insane. It is absolutely, like, it's, that particular episode is one of the craziest fucking things I've ever seen. And it's well done. I mean, you're talking about great special effects. And, you know, it's a whole anthology, though, about women who are ultimately scorned. That's why it's called Hell Hath No Fury. And I highly recommend that movie, though, if you guys haven't.
Didn't that come out of Canada? I keep thinking that was Canadian.
Well, Ryan Nixon is Canadian.
Yeah, so it's got that Canadian feel to it, even though it's a torture kind of movie.
And Ryan Nixon, I mean, he's got a new movie out, which we haven't reviewed. And also, he did Gutterballs, which is really pretty good.
Yeah, he did Live Feed after that, and then he did Gutterballs. This is before we knew anything about him, though. I mean, I think he was a protege of Palumbo, wasn't he? And somehow,
they were working together for a brief period.
The special effects and stuff in Torched are just really hard to watch. If you can find a copy of that now, I suggest that you.
Yep. And I think the uncut version was released on the original DVD, if it's out there. You know, I don't know how hard it would be to find. But let's go on to 2005.
Transition into 2005 here, okay. So, I hate this movie. I don't understand it.
What were the award winners?
That's what I'm getting at. The best picture that year was Crash, which is basically...
Oh, you hate Crash?
Yeah. Have you ever seen it?
Yeah, I've seen it. I hate it, but I mean...
It's basically just an excuse for, like, everybody to wheel out your stereotypical prejudices and just to stereotype people all over again in the name of, we're going to make some progress.
In the name of violence.
So the best actor that year was Philip Seymour Hoffman in Capote. Best actress was Reese Witherspoon in Walk the Line. And the best picture was Crash, but the best director was Ang Lee for Brokeback Mountain. Gay cowboys eating pudding.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that came out 2005. A lot of stuff that really, let's go ahead and talk about this one. Might as well. Hide and Seek. Remember seeing this in theaters?
Robert De Niro. Is that the one with Dakota Fanning?
Dakota Fanning.
I barely remember
Another one where Robert De Niro goes apeshit.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
I swear, man, like, I barely remember anything about that movie.
I kept watching it. I was like, God, I cannot believe Robert De Niro's doing a movie like this.
He's done, like, 7 or 8 films like that since then.
But, I mean, a guy that 10 years earlier was among the elite, he wouldn't, you know, you wouldn't see him in anything like this.
I'm pretty sure that De Niro just sits around his house like, I need another $15 million here. Let's take a look at the scripts. Pick one. He's, like, throwing darts at
the problem
script.
Is a lot of the movies that are out there are shit anyway, so.
I don't even think he cares, though.
Probably not.
By the amount and the kind of films that he makes, you would think he's just really picking them from, like, a fishbowl or something. He doesn't even pay any attention. I don't know anything about Hide and Seek, though. I can't remember shit. I don't even remember what the twist was.
Well, I think Dakota Fanning was, you know, Robert De Niro had two different personalities. He was her father, and he was also this crazy motherfucker. And the whole twist was Dakota Fanning, like, I think the thing was they were giving people the impression that she was talking to a ghost or something like that. And then there was a big unveiling that it's really Robert De Niro's crazy ass trying to kill her.
Yeah. So, okay, let's talk about... Next, we can talk about the Amityville Horror remake, which came out in 2005. Okay. If you take the Texas Chainsaw Massacre is one of the worst, and Dawn of the Dead is one of the best, this would be, like, right in the middle to me. Like, this is one of those where I don't hate it, but it doesn't blow your skirt up or anything either.
Yeah, it's one of those sort of like the Omen remake. I mean, it's sort of there. You don't think it's horrible. It's not really great either. So, I guess the next ones, we'll talk about these two right in a row because I've never seen them and I don't ever want to see them. Rick Botta, the director of both of these movies that came out the same year, Hellraiser Deader and Hellraiser Hellworld.
Bottom line is this. I've seen all these movies. I've seen all the Hellraiser movies. I can't keep a lot of them straight. Like, I just don't know the difference between Deader and Hellworld and, you know, just a whole bunch of them run together. So, yeah. I'm not even going to comment on them. I know I've seen them. They obviously weren't. They didn't make a lasting impression or anything on me.
I just remember, like, when they came out, I was like, there's a new Hellraiser. Then, like, a couple weeks later, there's yet another Hellraiser right beside of that one. I was like, what? Because I know I think both of these, or at least one of them, wasn't even a Hellraiser movie, and they just took the script and put Pinhead in it.
Yeah, one of them, I'm thinking it might be, shit, I don't know, it might be Deader. Has Craig Schiffer in it, where you can tell it just has absolutely nothing at all to do with Pinhead, but yet he's in it, like, very briefly towards the end. But a lot of people like that movie because it is so completely different from the Pinhead movies. Which, I mean, you could do that with anything. You could have an episode of Murder, She Wrote, and just throw Pinhead at the end of it.
Maybe
call
they'll
it
do
a Hellraiser movie.
Maybe they'll do that. Jessica Lansbury's still alive.
So, yeah. That's
great Pinhead.
That's all you can say about that movie. Let's talk about another clusterfuck of a movie, though. We saw this at the theater, too, and I every day wish that I hadn't. Cursed. Wes Craven's Cursed.
With Christina Ricci, Joshua Jackson in this. Yeah, I mean, this was a movie that I think they started making it in, like, 2001, 2002. And cut out, like, whole characters and scenes from the final movie. Just, like, it was one of those movies that just had a massive, I don't know what.
I don't know how this movie got greenlit, like how it got through the channels that people like would have to watch it and be like, yeah, we could put this out. Like, it's such a mess. How in the world did anybody look at this and say to themselves, you know, we can release this to the public, unless they thought the public was a bunch of fucking retarded monkeys or something. This movie makes no sense. It actually insults your intelligence by having to watch it because it's just so poorly constructed, and you can tell that it was just jumbled up and, like, cut all to pieces and stuff.
Yeah, because there's a lot of scenes in it where you're going, what in the hell does that mean? You know, why are they doing that? Yeah, it's a bad movie. It's one of those movies I've never, ever wanted to watch again, and I think a lot of people feel the same way because it's almost like the movie doesn't even exist anymore. Like, you don't see it anywhere. It would be almost impossible to find it to buy anywhere aside from a flea market. So, let's keep it that way. Another one that needs to keep it that way as well is Cry Wolf, which we saw these movies right together as well, as I remember. And it's
is this
like
the one with Bon Jovi in it?
Yeah.
Okay.
And Lindy Booth is in this as well. Yeah.
Well, Lindy Booth was getting around.
And Jared Padalecki, who's in another movie. What was he? He was in...
wasn't he in the Friday the 13th?
Yeah, the new Friday the 13th.
The only thing I remember here, this is what I remember about this movie. Something about computers. There's a killer, like a serial killer, that's typing shit on computers and letting, like, haunting this woman or something by doing this on a chat room or a computer or something like that. And he wears like a ski mask that is like a red ski mask, and he's running around this college dorm murdering these
and it
women
was on,
and stuff.
I remember it was actually on a cover of Fangoria magazine as well, so right. That's interesting.
And I actually remember who the killer is.
Yeah.
So, it sucks.
Now, Cry Wolf isn't too good.
Anyway.
But we got to mention, I mean, it did happen in 2005.
Oh, you want to talk about something that probably should have never happened, ever. Day of the Dead 2, Contagium.
Oh, God. Anna Clavel and Jimmy Glenn Doodleson.
You know, there's a lot of things you could say about the Day of the Dead remake. I mean, it's a bad movie. It's a horrible movie. I'm not going to lie. It's got a vegetarian version
of Bub
named Bud. Okay, that's how bad a fucking movie it is. It is Shakespeare compared to Day of the Dead 2 Contagium.
I don't know. John Freedom Henry, the star of Day of the Dead 2 Contagium, he can really carry a movie, Uncle Bill.
Yeah, really is the whole fucking
I don't
show.
Think you're giving J.F. Henry as much credit as he deserves.
I just remember watching this. It was probably filmed, it looked like it was filmed about two or three just locations. There's just spots where most of the film was made. And it's just...
Well, what I remember about it, though, is, like, okay, it sort of tries to homage the original Night of the Living Dead and stating the first part of it takes place in 1968. And a canister...
Right.
Like, it's actually not even a canister, it's like a thermos or something.
It is a thermos, yeah.
And these guys in this mental home or something, and half of the guys are, I don't know if they're trying to play retarded or if they're just really retarded. Like the actors and shit. And one of them stumbles upon this. This is messing Miss Edwin now. Yeah, Andrew Benarski was in it.
That's right. And something in the thermos, he unleashes the thermos contents.
Yeah, it's the
and
virus.
It's the virus that turns people into zombies.
It's stupid. It's like laughably shitty, though, actually, in certain parts.
Yeah, it's not even really a film as much as it is just like an exercise.
I would say as far as the Clevel Doodleson duo that Creepshow 3 is a worse movie just because it doesn't have any entertaining moments in it. This one does have like a couple of moments that's just so goddamn bad it's funny.
You know this will be the stuff, though, that people go back in 10, 15 years. This will be the cult B-movie type stuff people will talk about.
Yeah.
Where that people will just be... This will be the new Troll 2 kind of stuff.
And I'd heard stories, too, that the only reason Anchor Bay Entertainment released this is... Because I don't know if you people know, Doodlesons, they actually own Day of the Dead, the original Day of the Dead. So they were sort of holding Anchor Bay up like, look, if you want to release this special edition of Day of the Dead, you're going to release our Day of the Dead 2 Contagium. That's how it is. So that's how they got it released. A lot of people are like, Anchor Bay, why the hell did you release this? That's pretty much why, folks.
Yeah. So enjoy, though. If you have a chance, you can find this now for about $3 anywhere if you can find it. So.
Another one that I know you and I both saw in theater, and, you know, I really didn't like this movie from the first time I saw it, and I've grown to dislike it more and more the more I've seen it, and that would be George Romero's return to the big screen in Land of the Dead, which starred Simon Baker, who's actually a pretty big TV star now with The Mentalist. Actually, not even that bad of a show. Have you ever seen the show?
No, I haven't.
Also stars the girl from The Craft.
The Craft Dinner?
What was her name?
Robin Tunney.
Yeah, Robin Tunney. Woo. There you go. But he starred in this one along with John Leguizamo and Asia Argento.
You know, considering that we've got movies like Cursed and Cry Wolf and Day of the Dead 2 Contagion, it's not that bad of a movie in relation to those movies. However, here's the big problem that I always will have with Land of the Dead. It's the first movie that I've seen that Romero really, really tried to use CG, and it fucking sucks. Oh, my God. Nicotero is... He's the guy that does the makeup for the film. No, amazing makeup. I mean, you look at the makeup on Jennifer Baxter, I think was her name. Yeah. Who played like the number nine, the softball chick that has like...
Yeah, there's a lot of great... And even the animatronic zombies that are, yeah, that the are ones in the beginning that are of the movie.
Playing the instruments and stuff at the beginning. Just amazing stuff.
Actually, the cinematography in the movie is not too bad either. I mean, I like the look of the film. The problem is the film itself and who they have starring in the movie and the fact that... The lead zombie is just this big motherfucker that just screams, you know.
You talking about Big Daddy?
Yeah, he sucked. Yeah. The look of that zombie sucked.
Actually, though, man, you got to admit, though, there are parts in that movie where the CG is so bad that it just takes you out of the movie. Yeah. Like the part where the guy's head is behind his body, like it's right. Like... cut off almost completely, but he flips it up and bites the guy.
Well, I think
that just looks so horrible.
The cheap way to go about it, you know, and I mean, I think it's fast, it's quick, it's, you know, like a fucking bunny rabbit. The squibs.
Yeah.
You know, they don't do squibs anymore. It's all CGI blood shots. I hate that. I mean, I've always hated the look of that. It just looks completely generic because... when you have these people, they don't have any feeling of impact when they're getting shot. So you just see somebody just sitting there and a fucking bullet is supposed to go through their head and their head doesn't move. But you get this little generic CG splatter effect. You know, it may cost a little bit more money, may take a little bit more time, but I think it is worth it to at least do that.
By the way, that is the name of Steven Seagal's next movie, is Feeling of Impact.
Is it?
Yeah.
Steven Seagal is feeling the impact.
But another thing, too, did you say his name was Simon Baker?
Yeah.
And John Leguizamo. I'll get to him in a second. But Simon Baker fell asleep. Could not care. It was one of the most boring fucking characters in the history of
Australian.
Like, you know, people talk about Joe Pilato overacting and stuff in Day of the Dead. Give me something like that 100 times over somebody like Simon Baker, where he's just playing the most stale, white, you know, cracker kind of guy that's like nothing going on. There's nothing going on with that character whatsoever that you could care about. Then you got John Leguizamo, who is one of the worst actors anyway. Like, if you've ever seen him in anything, it's always...
Well, he's not in much. I think he's doing movies for First Look Entertainment now, so...
Well, it's good.
The movie also, too, and I noticed, and I know we have some hardcore Canadian fans here, but Land of the Dead just had this generic Canadian look to it as well. Like, I don't know what it is. I mean, it's kind of hard to explain. It actually resembles a little bit of the Sci-Fi Channel... in the way it's shot. I mean, well, I like the cinematography in it. I think that the cameras are something they use, and also the actors and just the way, I don't know.
Basically
don't
like, everything about the film.
I don't like the movie.
Yeah, the camera, the acting, the people they got, the script.
The movie's an absolute chore to get through now. Like, I tried watching it again about a year ago, and I might actually try to watch it one more time. I'll get the HD DVD to check that out, but other than that,
yeah,
I'll probably never see it again. Ever.
But 2005 actually did have a couple of good films that we went to see in the theater, and probably the one that I will remember the most going to see in a theater that year will be The Devil's Rejects, which came out in 2005. Yeah. That movie was almost built to play around a place like this, especially the ending of that movie. You have never
seen... Yeah, the ending is like a fucking party.
Yeah, you have never seen people in a theater get as riled up over an ending as the ending of that movie around here. I mean, that's like gold.
Yeah, The Devil's Rejects is just a, I mean, I know people, certain people don't get it. And I can understand why feedback, he mentioned last week he didn't get it. I completely understand because the guy, probably never been in the South, especially Eastern Kentucky, don't get a lot of the music or references and stuff in the movie. And the movie is a road movie, ultimately. And it's a road movie set, I think it's set somewhere in the South. It would about have to be, right? I don't think they say.
It always looked like it was shot in, like, Texas or something.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, I can understand folks up in Canada not being a fan of it. I liked everything about Devil's Rejects. I mean, I think that by far is the best Rob Zombie has ever done with a movie, and there's a lot of reasons for that. First of all, like we were saying before with House of a Thousand Corpses, he realized, I think, in Devil's Rejects, that the Captain Spaulding character was the best character in the movie. So he starred in this movie. Sid Haig was pretty much in the entire film this time. And the Otis character was refined and made, he was a lot better character in Devil's Rejects. And I think when we talked to Bill Moseley about that last year, he admitted that he didn't even know what the character was, really, when he was playing.
Yeah, and you can kind of tell that in House of Thousand Corpses. It's like, yeah, he doesn't know what the hell he's doing. It's an albino guy. It's kind of like Chop Top from, right, you know, Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2. He's like, he didn't really know what he was, and it's because he didn't know what he was supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. And the thing about that movie is, Devil's Rejects, is that Rob Zombie is a scumbag. I mean, he really is. And that movie is a fucking scumbag type of movie. I mean, that's the kind of movie where you can get away with saying fuck 47 times. I mean, it's not
147.
Yeah. It's not supposed to be like a dramatic kind of horror film, you know, like Halloween or something like that. We're supposed to actually have some plot and some themes to it going. No, this is more like an exploitation movie, which is where he should probably, yeah, always stay.
This is the type of movie he should always make. And I think in this movie in particular, what worked as well for it and really got you into the movie was the awesome choices that he picked for the soundtrack. And he didn't pick just all mainstream songs that people knew about, you know, like Free Bird at the end, and Midnight Rider, you know, the Allman Brothers and stuff like that. He brought in some, like, the mellow acoustic Terry Reid stuff and even fucking Buck Owens, man, and made it work in this movie, which I think, you know, when it comes to the choices for a soundtrack, you know, not exactly a score, that he probably had one of, if not the best, horror soundtracks of this decade, I would say, in Devil's Rejects. I mean, just stuff that I could listen to anytime, because when it comes to scores, I don't listen to that stuff. I listen to regular songs. I mean, the Halloween score is good, stuff like that, but I just don't listen to it. I won't listen to scores. So there are scenes in this movie that you're like, you're watching it and you're listening to music and it's like, what the fuck is that? What song is that? I never heard that. It's killer, you know? So it had that going for it too, and he's never ever come close to scoring or putting sound to his movies even close to Devil's Rejects.
Yeah, I doubt seriously that I would have ever heard of Terry Reid had it not been for that movie, really. That was just one of like the most bizarre, lost, yeah, you know, artists that actually got some acclaim from that movie. You know, everybody talks about him now that he's seen Devil's Rejects. But that movie, it was amazing to me how far he came from House of Thousand Corpses to Devil's Rejects, and even more amazing how much he failed trying to go from Devil's Rejects into Halloween. But that will always be a great movie. The end of that movie really took some balls. I mean, to play the whole fucking Freebird, to play all of Freebird over top of any scene actually takes some balls to do.
and it probably cost him quite a bit of money.
Yeah. And I really do respect that movie, though.
Yeah, but I've always liked Devil's Rejects, and I mean, Rob Zombie seems like he's sort of a snooty fellow when it comes to people making fun of his movies and whatnot. But I really hope that he gets to make another movie that's strictly his at some point. You know, not a remake, but just something that comes from his mind. That I think is the best stuff he can do. So, let's move onward, Uncle Bill, and talk about The Fog remake. Well, briefly. We'll talk about, because there's two of these movies on here that we actually did commentaries for. And I guess we don't want to talk about them too much. People sure. to get the commentaries, but Rupert Wainwright, who did, which one was it we said he did? I think it was The Ninth Gate or something like, no, it was Roman Polanski. Who, it was something like Bless the Child maybe or something, I don't know.
Now, that wouldn't surprise me, that movie sucks. yeah,
it was
okay.
one of those like that, I can't remember.
Yeah, obviously the fact that we had to be drunk, and not just drunk, but like sloppy drunk to even watch this movie, should be an indication of how we feel about it.
Mm-hmm. It sucked.
It's really hard for me to pick between this movie and Hostel as being the worst theatrical
it's
experience.
It's not hard for me, man. As much as I hate Hostel, The Fog remake is like, I think it's probably one of the worst movies to ever hit a theater. Just because there's not, like, we were watching it, and I remember, I mean, I vaguely remember because, like I said, we were drunk.
Yeah.
I was like, what in the hell is going on? Why is, like, because I forgot about the, it looks like Skeletor or something coming from the fog. The creature,
yeah, it does.
Something like that. And a lot of the actors are taking it too. Like, I don't think, like that fucking guy from, what is his name? Tom Welling from Smallville. One of the shittiest actors too. I mean, and then
yeah,
Maggie.
He definitely had Simon Baker syndrome.
Yeah, Maggie Grace also. Just a bunch of people you don't give a fuck about. Basically, and one of the shittiest, probably in my opinion, the shittiest remake ever was The Fog remake.
It's funny to me to take a really edgy and sophisticated character like the original, it's Stevie Wayne, right? In the original Fog, Adrian Barbeau playing that character, and turn her into just a blank, emotionless, fucking gap-esque model from...
What was her name?
I don't even remember her name. Who gives a fuck?
Well, what's the funny too is, and I remember The Fog, it worked in The Fog because Adrienne Barbeau had this sort of seductive voice that you could believe she would be a DJ. Well, this bitch, this is about like Scout Taylor Compton trying to be a DJ. I'm next on Shit 95 FM! We're gonna have Led Zeppelin on here! Da, da, da.
Yeah, it really is that grating too.
Yeah, so.
Okay, so.
Shit on that movie violently.
Here's one we don't talk about a lot. Came out in 2005. I've come to really, really appreciate this movie more.
There was actually a lot of stuff come out in 2005.
Yeah, I've come to appreciate this movie more and the actress behind this movie a lot more, which is The Exorcism of Emily Rose and Jennifer Carpenter in particular.
Yeah, this is a really cool movie. One I actually don't have on this list, believe it or not, so you got me on one.
So... It's basically, it's based off a German story of a girl that was actually, supposedly possessed by a demon.
Yeah. And I think you can actually listen to that on YouTube. I actually listened to it after I watched the movie.
I think.
Some weird shit.
I think in the original story, whatever they do for the exorcism actually ends up killing her. And there's like a big, you know, court hearing type of thing because they said that the circumstances behind the way that he did the exorcism caused her to die and all this stuff. So basically this movie is two different movies, really. It's a courtroom drama. That's one part of the movie. And the other part is like almost like The Exorcist, except Jennifer Carpenter is playing the lead role of Emily Rose. And the really, really cool thing about Jennifer Carpenter in this role is she had some sort of gymnastics background, so it calls upon her to contort herself into all these really bizarre poses and stuff as she becomes more possessed by this demon. And she actually does a lot of this stuff without the help of like CG and prosthetics and stuff, so it looks even more painful and dramatic, and it really is a good drama kind of horror movie, too.
Yeah, very much like I was saying about The Shining earlier, or later, I don't know what part we did of the show when. It's like a good fucking movie first. You don't even consider it a horror movie. And a lot of people probably don't consider it a horror movie anyway, because a lot of the stuff isn't even, you know, like you were saying, it's courtroom drama and stuff. But it was really, really well made. And Jennifer Carpenter, this is one of the first things she was in. This was before Dexter. And she was the lead role in this, and this movie made a ton of money that year. I do remember that, and it was one of those that it wasn't really a hot machine of the studio at first, just via word of mouth. People caused this to be such a success. So, excellent movie, and I highly recommend anybody checking that one out. Another excellent movie that I definitely want to talk about on here that has grown on me quite a bit since I first saw it would be Neil Marshall's The Descent, which we didn't get to see this in theaters. I think we got a DVD copy of this before it hit theaters here in the U.S. This was actually out in England probably in 2005 when it was first released. I think we saw it 2006, something like that on DVD. But, I mean, this really just showcased how much of a genius Neil Marshall is when it comes to camera techniques and visuals and the cinematography and all that. I mean, seeing this movie again when I got the Blu-ray of it and watched it, I was like, holy shit. I mean, this has got some creepy shit in it. And the story itself, I mean, I don't know if you've watched it again since we watched it the first time.
I have, actually, at least once. We watched it in.
But yeah, I mean, these girls go on a hiking, or actually mountain climbing or something like that, and one of them falls and gets seriously hurt. But as they're lost down there in these caverns and all this good stuff, these little creatures that are like, I don't know what they are.
They're supposed to be, they kind of look like human bats, like they're a combination of humans and bats mixed together.
They are preying upon the girls, and it's just like really like an old school movie. It reminded me a little bit of that movie Fortress, although they weren't really being chased by creatures or anything in that, but it's just a really cool visual movie, and seeing it in HD is almost really like seeing the movie again for the first time, because it really popped off the screen at you in that.
The really cool thing about this movie, too, is that he actually took a page from John Carpenter but reversed it, in that almost entirely through the film, it's all women.
Yeah.
Like, there's no men in the film. I think maybe in the end, or maybe not even in the end. Maybe there's no men in the movie at all.
I think in a dream sequence there was a... Because there's two different endings to this, too. In the I think on the Blu-ray they actually have the original ending, which in my opinion is the best ending, where, you know, spoiler alert up ahead, but the last remaining girl is going through her head, and this is an ingenious ending. She's escaping. She's free. She's found the vehicle, you know. And then she wakes back up and finds herself. She had a dream in, she's in the cave and she's still trapped there and stuff. Really good. Really un-Hollywood ending. I thought it was a bullshit move for Lionsgate to change the ending for the theatrical version, but that happened.
He really did, though. One thing about that movie, the one thing I didn't like about it, though, is that you could never really tell what the hell was going on during the action sequences. Maybe he intended it to be that way, so you were kind of always kept off guard, but he really did create an atmosphere with that movie. Like, you saw, off in the distance, you'd see things move, and you never really saw what they were, and shit would be, like, kind of fluttering around. You never really, he would throw sounds in there. He never let you completely see what was coming, and he always kept you kind of off balance with the way that film was shot.
Well, and like I was saying, again, I don't want to beat a dead horse, but seeing a movie like this that was shot primarily, like, in the dark, where on DVD you don't really see a lot of what's going on, I think that's what makes the Blu-ray so effective, is that, like, a lot of stuff you couldn't see in the DVD you can see on the Blu-ray. So, Uncle Bill, we need to watch this again on Blu-ray.
Oh, shit.
Seriously, though, man, like, the second time I saw the movie was on Blu-ray, and I really, really liked it a lot more then for some reason.
Shut up.
Look, folks, you need to realize this. Now, Uncle Bill's been talking more and more about Blu-ray lately.
Nuh-uh.
So, what do you got next, shithead?
Let's see. I guess this would be a direct-to-DVD release that came out in 2005. We saw it. We can spend a little bit of time talking about it. Feast. This was the first one, too, before it got completely insane. With Henry Rollins was in it. I think Jason Mewes was in it. Clu Gulager is in this one. A lot of people that are recognizable to genre fans.
Yeah. This movie's almost like one of those movies that... you can see Robert Rodriguez directing or something like that, very much in that style of filmmaking. And John Gulager really didn't do much before. I mean, has he done anything before?
I don't think he did anything before this, movie-wise. Yeah.
And the movie is a fun movie. I mean, it's not one of my favorites, I would say, but it's definitely a good flick. I mean, I was a big fan of it when I first saw it. Unfortunately, I've never seen it since. It's not one of those movies I watch.
It's just, it's nuts, but it's not like nuts to the point like the second movie got to be, where it's just completely out there with like gratuitous nudity and, yeah, and like gross bodily excretion kind of stuff. But this movie was actually pretty fun, and I recommend it to you check it out if you haven't seen it.
Another direct-to-DVD one we can mention real quick is from Tim Sullivan, and that's 2001 Maniacs, which is sort of a remake from of 2000 Maniacs, Herschel Gordon Lewis joint. And it's a real, I think it's a lot of fun as well. I mean, it's in the same vein, of course, as Feast, in that I haven't really watched it since, but I had a lot of fun when I first watched it. Stays true to the 80s slashers, of course, and you know, Tim Sullivan, he's a big horror fan himself, so I mean, I had a lot of fun with it.
Thought Robert Englund did really well in that movie too, playing like the lead. Is he a colonel or something? He's something like that.
I think he was the mayor.
Yeah, that's right, he's the mayor. Yeah, it's a really good slasher film.
Got a lot of boobies in it, you gotta appreciate that.
Wish Tim Sullivan the best. It's actually a pretty mean-spirited film, but in the great tradition of Southern films like that.
A lot of good gore stuff like that in it.
Yeah. Here's one, though, that I just wish, right when I say it, you're going to know why. Toby Hooper's Mortuary. I just want to be like, remember,
I actually have that on Blu-ray.
Well, man, you must be proud. I want to do like in Living Color and just be like, hated it, and that be
it. It's shitty.
That be it.
Yeah. Toby Hooper, yeah. I don't know what's wrong with you, buddy.
Just move on. Nobody needs to even talk about Mortuary.
One that actually came out in 2005, I actually dug quite a bit, changing up a little bit to get some Euro cult goodies in here for Steve. I know, Steven. I appreciate this. Do You Like Hitchcock? From Dario Argento, actually came out that year.
Oh, that's a good thing, because actually I do like Hitchcock.
I don't like Hitchcock, Dario. Yeah, this was one where a serial killer sort of, I think the whole story was, he rents a video and discovers that the killer, the local serial killer, is murdering people in similar ways as to the movie Strangers on a Train, something like that.
Strangers on a Train. Yeah, that's the one where two strangers meet on a train, and the one guy asks the other guy to bump off somebody for him if he bumps off somebody for them. Kind of like a tit for tat kind
and
of
true deal. Violence.
Yeah. So they decide that they'll do
that's
that.
A cool flick, though, man. I mean, Argento's one of those guys that still to this day makes quality movies. I mean, there's not a whole lot of those old school directors you can say that does that. I really dug Mother of Tears as well.
You know, there really hasn't been a film that I've seen Argento do. And I haven't seen Phantom of the Opera in a long time. Everybody always talks about how shitty that is.
I've never seen that one.
But there hadn't really been one of his movies that I've just been like, God, this is fucking horrible. I can't watch it at all.
Yeah, I agree. I would agree with that. I think that if you haven't seen Do You Like Hitchcock, I would recommend checking it out. I think we reviewed it back when it came out on DVD originally. So go in the archives and check that out.
Okay, so I remember very little about this next film, but we went to see it in the theater, I'm pretty sure. House of Wax.
Yeah, I was actually getting ready to talk about
which
that.
Which was, of course, the remake of the Vincent Price House of Wax. This one had, I think Alicia Cuthbert, something to that effect.
Paris Hilton was also in it.
Yeah, she was. And
you know what? I actually like this movie quite a bit. I mean, I know people, a lot of the hipster horror fans are like, oh, this is bullshit. They're desecrating the Vincent Price movie. This movie had nothing to do with the Vincent Price movie. This was like, they used the name, they basically made an 80s slasher movie with having a little bit to do with a wax museum. Not a whole lot, you know. And it had creative death scenes in it, had some hot ladies in it. I don't see what the hell was so bad about it.
Yeah, I remember liking it when I saw it at the theater. And plus, I didn't grow up watching House of Wax. I mean, I had no frame of reference to know what House of Wax was about.
The Vincent Price movie House of Wax has nothing to do with the remake. It doesn't. So I don't understand why people bitch and moan about it so much. It's a completely different type of movie. And House of Wax 05 is, I think, a quality slasher movie. So the folks that don't agree with that, you can go blow yourself.
Oh!
So. God. Return of the Living Dead 4 and 5. Elri Akium.
Direct Deese.
And that was a big, like, there was actually, you know, for a couple of years there, we were talking about this because they had shot one of the movies,
Chernobyl.
Yeah, Chernobyl in the French Alps.
No. In the French, no, Chernobyl's in,
I'm getting that confused with where Andre the Giant's from. He's from Chernobyl. Chernobyl is like, yeah, the radiation, where they had the radiation disaster in 1986 or something like that.
I don't know where it's in Ukraine or Russia or someplace like that.
And they actually went there, and there's still heavy levels of radiation and shot, you know, some exterior shots.
Yeah, I guess that was the film's claim to fame. Unfortunately, both these movies really suck. And the only thing I remember about Return of the Living Dead 4, which is Necropolis, is somewhere along the line towards the end, like, somebody's parents die in the film, and they turn them into these giant, like, RoboCop zombies.
They turn them into shit demons.
They're like these motorized zombies that can fire missiles and shit, just like RoboCop.
I think poor old Peter Coyote is in this, and that guy's...
By the way, I don't know what the fuck was going on with Peter Coyote when he was doing these films. It almost looks like he has a neurological condition.
They probably had to put him on some heavy drugs.
Because he's literally making the face where, like he smelled something bad throughout the entire film. Oh. He's like,
If you want to hear more about Return of the Living Dead 4 and 5, listen to our William Butler interview, the guy that wrote the original script for both of those movies. So you'll want to check that out.
Okay, so The Ring 2 came out. I didn't see that movie.
You saw a scene from it.
I saw a scene from it. Really, that's all I ever need to see.
Let's just say it's pure shit, and let's move on.
Okay. Saw 2.
I actually like Saw 2.
I do, too. I think Saw 2 is a good slasher type of film.
I kind of like Saw 2 better than the first one, actually, I think.
Yeah,
I need to watch Saw 2 again.
It's on the same kind of lines with me, really. I mean, I like the ending of that movie. I like a lot of the stuff that they do, the traps and stuff that they do. I don't know. It's just a really good movie that you can follow. And before it got just completely stupid.
Yeah. Another one that I kind of liked was Wolf Creek, which Greg McLean directed that one and actually starred in it as well.
Hello, ladies.
What, I'm Greg McLean.
I'm here to cut you up, boy.
I haven't seen this movie in a long time, but I actually remember it not being too bad, and I want to get a copy of it again.
It's brutal. It's one of those movies.
It's kind of brutal.
It's kind of like, and I don't know why this is coming to my mind, but it is. It's kind of like Eating Alive. And it's just about a crazy old son of a bitch that lives out in the middle of nowhere, and these women happen to stumble upon him.
Yeah.
And at first you think, like, he's a regular...
They stumble upon evil.
Yeah, he's a regular outback kind of guy. And as it turns out, that's not the case.
Yeah, so there you go.
Well, shit, I don't really have anything else left except one particular film.
And that's the movie we're actually doing a commentary on, I believe.
Yeah.
Do people really want to know what we think about this movie by now?
Yeah, I'd say at this point, if you don't know what we think about Hostel, I didn't like it.
No, I wasn't a big fan of that one. Also released that year, though, just so we can end on a high note, is from Chris Severtson, who actually did this awesome independent movie based on a... novel from our good buddy Jack Ketchum, The Lost.
That's true, yeah.
And this was a movie that didn't come out. I think Chris Severtson actually sort of ruined his career making the Lindsay Lohan movie, I Know Who Killed Me, which I actually don't think that's that bad of a movie. I mean, I know people probably be laughing at me for saying that, but maybe it's just because I've got a hard-on for Lindsay Lohan or something. I don't know.
That could be it.
I think that this movie is an excellent movie, though. This should have been released in theaters. This was so good. This is way better than The Girl Next Door, in my opinion.
I'm going to say, though, that, like, 2003, looking back on maybe, I'd say not maybe, all of the 2000s is probably the worst year for horror films of this decade.
2005 seemed to be a pretty strong year, though.
Yeah, that's. I guess they just threw so much shit out there that some of it had to stick.
But yeah, that ends, I guess, part two of our decade in review series. We'll actually have one more part of this, probably be sometime in the middle of January, and then we'll do the 2009 year in review show. So we've got a lot of cool stuff planned in the upcoming weeks ahead, so you definitely want to tune in. What we're going to do, though, is take a break and take some phone calls, Uncle Bill, and answer some fan questions, because we do have quite a few we need to get to, a lot of lengthy ones on there.
Yeah, we got a lot of
stuff. People don't know the meaning of the word spiffy.
Spiffy.
Yeah, or Pithy.
Pithy, yeah. Spiffy, I think that Spiffy was a cartoon ghost on Scooby-Doo.
Spiffy.
Though. Spiffy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, let's go ahead and get to that right now.
Let's take a break, and we'll get to fan questions here on DeadPit.com. You know what, Uncle Bill?
Shut your fucking mouth right now.
No. I want to talk about Fast Custom Shirts.
Holy shit. Well, let's talk about it.
FastCustomShirts.com provides some of the best horror t-shirts I have ever fucking seen.
I don't think that you can really fully appreciate how awesome the t-shirts are over at FastCustomShirts.com. Until you go over to FastCustomShirts.com and look for yourself.
Yeah. The Hitman T-Shirt Joe. Mm-hmm. The highest quality of shirts that I've actually designed some of, Uncle Bill. He actually lets the fans design some of the shirts for his site. Who else does that? Who else?
Nobody I know of. But when he's not busy playing with Carmen Opsy, he's busy cranking out some of the most high-quality fucking shirts that you're going to find this side of any other damn whore t-shirt maker.
Yeah. So check them out. FastCustomShirts.com. The best there is.
The best there was.
And the best there ever will be.
It's a boot respect.
Welcome back, folks, to Dead Pit. I'm the Creepy Kentuckian.
And I'm Uncle Bill. Hello.
Hope you all enjoyed that second part of our decade review series. I think you all should have, because I thought it was pretty killer myself.
Yeah, I mean, we really brought out everything you could possibly bring out.
Yeah.
We left no stone unturned.
Yeah, so this epic show continues, Uncle Bill. We're going to take a couple of phone calls. We're going to try to make this segment as short as possible, because we got a lot of stuff planned for the show, isn't that right?
We do. We've got a lot of stuff planned, buddy. What are we going to do? What are we going to do?
Well, after this portion, we're going to have a huge announcement about our next interview on Dead Pit, which will be on January 1st, 2010. We're bringing in the new year with violence.
So until then, though, let's go ahead. We're going to take some phone calls. We're going to read some fan questions.
And you can't forget about the Psychopath theme song we're debuting.
Yeah, here. That's right. So let's get started. Hi, CK and Uncle Bill. Happy holidays, guys. I love the show. I have a few questions for you guys. About the Return of the Living Dead series, have you guys ever thought of doing a Return of the Living Dead retrospective or doing a whole show about the series? Also, have you tried to get Clue Gulager or Don Caffa for interviews? Return of the Living Dead is one of my favorite films, and I would love to hear you guys talk more about the trilogy. 4 and 5 don't count in my mind.
Those shouldn't count. Yeah.
Those films were horrid and made Zombie 4 look like Zombie 3. So I guess we should start with that part, though.
Yeah, I mean, I think that'd be a good idea for a show at some point, or a series of shows. I think we could get Don Calfa on the show, actually. Like, I know he's on Facebook, he posts pretty regularly on there. Beverly Randolph has signed up for our message board and posted a few times. We could get her to do a show.
Yeah, I'm about 100% sure we could get Jewel Shepherd to do it.
Jewel Shepherd would definitely do it. She's always on Facebook posting stuff, so. Yeah, we could do that. I mean, the only thing is, if I did it, I would want to do it right, which means Clue Gulager and James Karen. Now, James Karen is getting up there. That guy, I would like to get him on the show just because he's done a lot of stuff. I mean, he's also in Poltergeist as well, and I think he was in the Tobe Hooper movie Invaders from Mars. He was in all kinds of stuff, not even horror related, you know, just go on his IMDb page. Frankenstein Meets the Space Monster early on. I know he was in that. So I think he would be a great interview to get if we could get him to do it. Same thing goes with Clu Gulager. The guy's, you know, he's been in Westerns back in the day. Pretty much one of those Where's Waldo guys, just being in everything, you know, so.
Yeah, I'd like to do it. He's talking about doing a show just about the movies, and that would be a good show to do, I think, just to do like 1, 2, and 3, because really 1 and 2 are almost the same movie. 3, it really, really goes off into something else, but they're all three really good movies, so that's a...
No doubt, no doubt.
So he's got a second part of the question. Since you guys like wrestling and horror films, would you ever be interested in interviewing Al Snow? I hear he's been starring in some low-budget horror films such as The Legacy and Hell House, and he's always been a really good wrestler and may prove to be an interesting Dead Pit interview. You guys do awesome interviews, so thank you for giving us many hours of entertainment every week. Stay creepy.
Yeah, Al Snow, I mean, we could definitely... I think he would definitely do an interview if we wanted him to do one. I mean, he lives in Kentucky, so, and he's going to be at the Darkwood show coming up in March in Pikeville. So, yeah, I mean, we could get him to do
it. We actually have an in kind of with him too, because, one of our friends is like really close with him somehow or another, and his wife as well. So we could definitely do that in the future. But that question was from 3D Fan Mike. So 3D, thank you, 3D Fan
3D
Mike.
3D Fan Mike. Okay. So we do have a phone call coming in. Let's see who it is.
Hello, you're on Dead Pit Radio. Who's this?
This is Jerry Hara.
Oh, no, it's the Beast from the Northeast.
Oh, that's right, sir. What's going on?
Not much. What's going on with you?
I'm just outside of my break for work, freezing my ass off.
Oh, hell, I can only imagine, yeah. What's the temperature like up there?
The last time I checked, it was like 29 degrees.
Oh. Well, I'm sure it gets worse than that, though. So what's been going on with you, man? We haven't heard from you in a while.
Not too much. Just working, you know, holiday season. I've been pretty busy and just been watching some movies. A couple of weeks ago, on my birthday, matter of fact, I found a blockbuster that was going out of business, and I picked up like a shitload of movies, like maybe like 30 movies for like... $35.
Damn.
So I've just been watching a lot of shit lately that I bought.
Cool.
So has there been anything remotely good that had come out of that lot?
There's been some good, some very bad. Last night I watched 2001 Maniacs, which I really enjoyed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's excellent.
I thought that was very good.
Yeah, we talked about that on the... that came out in 2005, so we covered that in the... Year in Review, Decade in Review series, so that was really good.
Do you guys know what's up with the sequel? I know they're supposed to be making a sequel to that. Is it done? Is it coming out soon? Or
well, I think Tim Sullivan was working on that, and then he got the Scream Queens 2 show that's on VH1. Like he took over James Gunn's part on the Scream Queens as the host, so I think that project is kind of like in limbo right now because of that.
That's a shame because I really, you know, I'd like to see your part two to that because I really enjoyed it. I thought the story was good. Like, it kind of played out like a slasher movie, kind of, but, you know, the story was a little bit different. It had a nice twist to it, and there was a lot of hot chicks, which is always good, and Robert Englund was in it, which is always fun to see.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I really enjoyed that one.
Yeah, it was very much in the tradition of 80s goodness, I guess, in the horror genre, so I enjoyed it quite a bit. Krista Campbell's always nice to look at as well.
Yeah.
The Milkmaid.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. And I picked up a whole bunch of shit, but another one I really enjoyed was Alligator. That was really good.
Oh, you picked up the original Alligator, the 80s one?
Yeah, the original one.
Oh, yeah. That really is like an awesome movie to be... as dated as it is.
Yeah, did you guys ever see a movie I picked up too? It was like $3. It's called Heebie Jeebies.
I've heard of it.
Yeah, I have too, but I've never seen it.
Okay, well, let's just say just keep it that way. It's pretty bad. And I watched last night, I watched Murder Party. don't know if you guys have seen that.
I tried to watch that one time because a lot of people had said that it was really, really good, but I just never could get into it. I don't know what you thought about it.
It was okay. I mean, I really didn't see much of a story behind it. Like, you know, they captured this guy. You know, it was like a bunch of deranged artists that were trying to kill this guy to get a scholarship. And, I mean, it was okay. Like, it had some pretty decent gore in it and everything. But as far as the storyline to keep me, like, occupied or to keep me interested, I really didn't care very much.
Right.
Like, it kind of reminded me of, like, the Poteg pictures, like, you know, the Fred Vogel movies, but just very tame, you know, much tamer. Like, if just, like, violence for the sake of violence. Like, I mean, you know, it was okay, but I really didn't see them.
There's a movie we're going to be reviewing on the show this week called Psychopath that I know will be right up your alley. So you definitely want to tune into the review portion this week on the show. It's one of those movies that I can tell is just made for slasher fans in general, and I'm sure you'd get a kick out of it. I don't know if it's going to come, I don't know when it's coming out to DVD, but, I was actually thinking of you while I was watching it. I knew that, like, that was who it was made for, that type of horror fan, so.
Yeah, I mean, I picked up another good slasher movie. I picked up Don't Go in the House, I believe it was called.
Yeah, there's like 15 movies that have Don't Go in the beginning of it. Like.
Yeah, I had to think about that for a second. But, you know, yeah, I've been watching some good stuff. I watched the Wizard of Gore remake. I don't know if you guys have seen that.
Yeah, with Crispin Glover in it.
What did you think about it? I thought it was absolutely horrible.
It's just like, it's one of the biggest, like, fucking incoherent mess of movie I've ever seen.
I haven't seen it.
Yeah.
It really is. You really don't. Yeah,
save yourself trouble.
Don't worry about it.
Okay.
It's horrible.
Cool.
Yeah.
But,
like, I felt that I was on drugs by the end of the movie trying to figure out what the hell was going on.
I think that was the point, though. It's kind of like Crispin Glover's, like, abstract, you know, attempt at making a movie that's abstract, like a German kind of movie that's just bizarre, you know?
But, Jerry, man, we appreciate you calling, and it's always good to hear from you. And if we don't, well, I'm sure we won't hear from you again because this is the last phone call we're taking until Christmas.
Oh,
so
wow.
You have a Merry Christmas, man, and try to stay safe on those savage streets of New York City.
I will. You guys have a good holiday too, brother.
All right.
You take care, sir.
See you.
All right. You too. Bye.
I thought he probably thought I was like, this is the last phone call we're taking, period.
We're never taking another phone call.
So, Dangle21, who likes to dangle, dangle, dangle in the wind, says, hey, Kentuckians, I was curious if you guys ever heard any news on the theatrical re-releasing of George Romero's Dawn of the Dead in 3D, the same technology that was used to revamp Tim Burton's The Nightmare Before Christmas, for example, was said to be used on Dawn of the Dead, and that they were planning a theatrical re-release, according to Dick P. Rubenstein. In light of all this 3D craze, do you think that the re-release of the original in 3D could catch on and become the next big trend? I'm not a huge fan of 3D, but the idea of watching some of my favorite horror films on the big screen would be killer. I could only imagine a chainsaw, flying sphere, and alien in 3D. Is this information true, or are they just blowing smoke up our ass? What are your thoughts?
First of all, do I think that that could work? Yeah, I really do think that that could work, just because, like, everybody is into gimmicks now as far as filmmaking goes, and audiences react to gimmicks. That's the way it's going. So I think it would definitely work. I think just by saying you put 3D on something would cause people to want to go and see it.
But ultimately, do you think Dawn of the Dead in 3D will work?
Look,
will
it
be successful? It
doesn't make a bit of fucking difference to me. We're never going to see it in 3D.
Yeah.
I just like to see it back on in the theater. If it came to a theater anywhere around here, I'd go see
it. Yeah, I think that when that happens, and I'm thinking it will, knowing Richard P. Rubenstein, that the theatrical release of it will be really limited. You're talking Chicago, Los Angeles, and New York. As far as a wide theatrical re-release of any of these movies, you know, even Texas Chainsaw or Alien or any of that stuff, that's not going to happen. I mean, that's just not going to happen. When they re-released movies like The Exorcist, What were some of the other big re-releases? I think they had Nightmare on Elm Street a few years ago. That's only in huge cities. That's not like these massive theatrical runs like they do with these major movies. So it'll be cool for people that live in large cities, but that's never going to catch on. I mean, that's not going to be like, you know, 2,000 theater runs or shit like that. It's not going to happen. So anyway, let's answer another. Hello, y'all on Dead Pit Radio with the Creepy Kentuckian and Uncle Bill. Who's this?
Hey, guys, this is Cody LL.
What's going on,
Cody?
Hey, Uncle Bill.
Howdy, sir. How are you doing?
I'm freezing my butt off. That's how I'm doing.
Now, where are you? You're in Kentucky, right?
No, I'm in Tennessee.
Oh, okay.
Same thing.
Yeah, sound like you're the same location as us, the general location. Yeah, it's kind of cold, isn't it? I think we're getting like 5 to 10 inches, I've heard, over the next couple of days.
It's supposed to snow this weekend.
Yep. That's what we hear. So we might be out building our own life-size Blizzard Bob. So what's going on with you, man? Have you been watching any holiday horror flicks to celebrate the season?
Well, last night I watched Gremlins.
I actually did too. That was bizarre. Yeah, I had the Blu-ray of it, so I finally checked that out.
Yeah, that's a movie from my childhood. I love that movie.
Yeah, it's one that like Chris Columbus also wrote The Goonies and Gremlins, like right back to back, and you know, a lot of movies from that time period just have a certain innocence, I guess, to them. That
he also directed Home Alone and Mrs. Doubtfire, didn't he?
Yeah, that was a little bit later on. I think he was something like 24, 25 years old when the first movies he did came out, like 84, 85. So that's pretty amazing. I mean, the movies that he wrote. At least
I think I heard he got the idea for Gremlins because he used to live in an apartment building and he heard things like running around in the elevator shaft or something.
Right.
I always thought he got the idea from the Terror at 20,000 Feet episode of The Twilight Zone where William Shatner sees that little gremlin on the wing of the plane.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite episodes of Twilight Zone.
You know, actually that has some kind of like Christmas reference to it because I think in that one, it looks like a little abominable snowman guy. I don't know if they meant to do that or if that was just like a really shitty outfit that thing had on.
They probably just had a really shitty outfit because those episodes back then, I mean, I can only imagine the budget on those because there was nothing else like that at the time on TV, so.
Well, today I watched Gremlins 2, you know.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I think I like Gremlins 2 even better than the first one.
Yeah, there's a lot of things about that movie that are actually superior to the first movie. Among them, like, one of my favorites is the different, like, diversity of the gremlins that they actually have. Like, they've got the really...
Yeah, I like the fact that even before they get into the chemicals, the gremlins look different from each other. I mean, in the first movie, they all look the same, but mm-hmm. you have different types of gremlins in the second one.
Yeah, I think they had a lot bigger budget for the sequel just because, you know, the first Gremlins made, I don't know how much money, it made a ton of money. I think it was one of the biggest movies that year.
I know it was a huge hit.
Do what now?
I kind of wish Joe Dante didn't, like, whenever he talks about his movies, he always seems to think all his movies suck.
I think that ultimately he knows that he's making, what in the 1950s when he grew up was known as a B movie that he would see.
Yeah, he loved all those 1950s monster movies and stuff.
Yeah, I think Joe Dante, I mean, overall, in my opinion, I think Gremlins is by far the best thing he ever did. But overall, I think that the guy's a pretty solid director. And, you know, in my opinion, Spielberg producing it worked a lot with the first Gremlins movies as well because it seemed like anything Spielberg touched around that time period, it always seemed like he was the one actually doing everything in those movies, which was strange, but I don't know.
Gremlins, I think there were a lot of things in Gremlins that Joe Dante definitely had control over, not Spielberg.
I think that it seemed, though, that the spirit of the movie was more like a, you know, it was kind of a horror movie, but a fan-friendly sort of deal where they make Gizmo is clearly the cute one. But I see what you mean. I mean, Joe Dante makes, you know, among the other gremlins, Gizmo's the little dork that they all make fun of and spit on and stuff like that. So I think that, you know, the look of the movies, mainly what I'm talking about with Spielberg, that a lot of his movies are just really glossy and they look great.
The one thing I always noticed about Joe Dante, though, is the guy will always start a movie, except for maybe Inner Space. This might be the only exception. There'll always be like...
Well, I've never seen Inner Space, so I don't know.
Okay, well, you got to check that one out then. But there'll always be a point in his movies where things like go from real kind of like comedy, kid stuff, to like a darker kind of tone. Like he always was really adept at shifting between the different tones of a movie, where it's not really for kids, but it's not really for adults either. It's just like somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, I tell you something. When I was a little kid, when I would watch Gremlins, I had kind of a love-hate relationship with it in that I liked it, but there were parts of it that freaked me out, like the whole part with the cocoons.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
When they hatch out of those cocoons, that part always scared the living daylights out of me.
Yeah, the part that always scared the shit out of me when I was a kid was the part where the gremlin actually gets loose and he's chasing after the, is it like a science teacher?
Yeah.
In that, that was
where
the part.
Where he kills that black guy?
Yeah, that was the part that always kind of freaked me out.
I don't know. I never understood how he killed that guy. I mean, I know you saw a syringe in the guy's butt, but how did that kill him?
Was it poison or something? Or, I mean, some kind of medicine that maybe killed him? I don't know. I never really thought of it. But that's the thing about movies. Go ahead.
I just don't know how that killed him. I mean, you never find out what was in that thing, so maybe it was poisonous. I don't know.
Yeah. But that's the thing about certain 80s movies is, like, they did stuff in those movies, in a lot of movies that were fan-friendly, like even Goonies and stuff like that. You just wouldn't see it in movies today, like little kids actually using foul language and stuff like that. And like you
They wouldn't dare do that today in those kind of movies.
And like you were saying, have killings and at the same time have something, like, just really over the top, like all the gremlins in the movie theater watching, you know, Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, which is, you know, something that I laughed at when I was a little kid. I mean, I got that was just hilarious.
I think I heard that Gremlins was actually supposed to be a very dark movie, like they were supposed to kill the mom, and you were supposed to see her head coming down the stairs and stuff.
Yeah.
I guess Spielberg got a hold of it and decided he wanted to make it a little more E.T.-ish.
That was a good move, though, because he probably made a damn fortune off the merchandising for that movie. Because you remember everybody had a fucking Mogwai thing when they were kids.
That movie may have been more merchandise than E.T., you know, which came out a couple of years
ago. Yeah, because there was a lot more stuff to merchandise than that one.
They had merchandise with Zach Gallagher.
Well, I remember still this day the little, they would have these little record books that you could get at Hardee's or something like that. And Hoyt Axton would.
Oh, God, my grandma had some of those things.
Yeah, and I think Hoyt Axton would narrate them and tell this little story and stuff. I wish to God I could still have them. I mean, maybe they're on YouTube in some form or something. The audio is, but
back in the day when restaurants would sell like glasses too that would have Gremlins decal stuff on the side of them.
But
I was born like 3 years after that movie came out, but it was still real popular when I was a little kid. So. Yeah.
But, man, we appreciate you calling. It was an interesting conversation, of course, about Gremlins. Definitely one of my favorite holiday horror movies. And
yeah, I pretty much watch it every Christmas.
Yeah, for sure. But you have a Merry Christmas, and we'll talk to you again soon.
You take care of yourself, Cody.
Okay, Merry Christmas, guys.
All right, see you, man.
Bye.
Very odd, yeah, because I just actually watched the movie last night again.
What would you say would be your number one holiday horror film?
I don't know if I have a number one. I mean, I would say the one that did it best and is strictly a horror movie would be Silent Night, Deadly Night.
That's what I would pick too.
Yeah.
So
that's probably not the cool one because it's not really obscure or anything, but
whatever. It's the best one. Eat shit. Let's see. this comes to us from Cody. Cody's going to have a long segment on
it. Cody was bitching you about him not being able to get through, but he finally got through.
Good job, Cody. Well, if you guys don't know, I made a botched attempt at a call last week. We just talked to you, buddy.
Yeah.
Everything's fine.
Yeah, what's his question?
Okay, I've never seen Silent Night, Deadly Night because the idea of Santa Claus murdering people really disturbs me. Now, I'm not like everyone who boycotted the film. I'm just saying that kind of bothers me, especially since I saw that part where Billy confronts the little girl. I guess what I'm asking is, do you think I should grow some balls and see the film?
Yes.
Yeah, because it ain't Santa Claus. It's not like, it's like the Passion of the Christ. Jesus really wasn't in that film. You know that, right? I mean, that was Jim Caviezel.
They don't even, in the story, it's not even Santa Claus. It's a fucking crazy son of a bitch dressed as Santa Claus, so.
It's not even attempting to be Santa Claus.
You're all good.
And you're fine.
Cody, I hate to tell you, man, Santa Claus doesn't exist.
What? Oh!
No!
Oh, wait, there's more, though. When did you guys first see the horror film that would become your favorite? He said, mine is John Carpenter's The Thing, and I first saw it when I was 15. It still manages to terrify to this day. How about you?
Horror film that would become my favorite.
Yeah, when did you first see the horror film that would become your favorite horror film?
Well, okay. And I've said this numerous times. It's probably not cool again, but it's always been my favorite horror movie, and that's John Carpenter's Halloween. And believe it or not, I saw a lot of the sequels before I ever saw the original. And I think I was like 13, 14, watched the original. It was on TV, I think, or it was on one of those movie channels like Cinemax or something like that. And oddly enough, thinking back at it, that movie never really aired that much on the movie channels growing up. Do you remember? Like, it was just one of those that you just
didn't see.
So I finally saw it. I was like, hell, this is the original movie, so let's go ahead and fucking watch it. And I was just amazed at how much better of a movie it was in those sequels. Like, technically better. You know, the scares were there and stuff like that. And then I sort of got obsessed with the movie a little bit and, you know, trying to get my personal copy, which didn't happen until a couple years later, and wanting to see all of the sequels. Because up to that point, I didn't see all the sequels yet. So,
Dawn of the Dead is my favorite horror film. I think the first time I saw it was probably when I was, I'm going to say, anywhere between 6 to 8 years old. Somewhere in that frame there. And of course I saw it with my dad. The weird thing is, to me, I like that movie as much then as I do now, but for different reasons. But which is, when I think about it, that is bizarre, because there's really no reason why a 6, 7, 8 year old kid should like Dawn of the Dead at all, really.
Well, but now probably not, but back then, I mean, it was one of those movies that has everything for everyone in it. I mean, there's something that everyone can enjoy. Even if you're not a fan of horror movies, you know, back then. I don't know about now, because people are just so jaded now with wanting to see all this high-gloss, you know, nonsense, special effects, stuff like that. But back then, I mean, it really did have, like, it was a movie for anyone that was just
a fan
of
it. Well, all the stuff in it, too, like, there's certain things that I can remember from when I was a kid that you really liked, like the screwdriver gag, the bikers, like all the obvious stuff that kind of sets that film apart that would really catch a kid's eye. So, yeah. So he says, finally, I know most people say that big stars are never good in horror movies, but can you think of an instance where a major star did really well in a horror film? I personally thought Gregory Peck was really good in the original Omen, and I especially think Jack Nicholson in The Shining. Does anybody else come to mind as far as major stars?
Major stars
in
a horror film.
God, I guess that depends on what you classify as a major star.
How about Clint Eastwood in Revenge of the Creature?
Yeah, how about Leonardo DiCaprio in Leprechaun?
Jennifer Aniston in... Leonardo DiCaprio was in Critters.
Yeah, that's right. Jennifer Aniston was in Leprechaun. God.
To me, major stars don't work in horror movies, period. Like, Jack Nicholson... First of all, to me, I mean, I don't know. I just see The Shining as a great movie, period. I don't see it as a great horror movie. It is a horror movie, I guess, but I really don't classify it that way.
I mean
it's a separate...
Would you consider Kurt Russell to be a major star? Because he was great in The Thing.
He wasn't a major star then, though.
He definitely wasn't then, but I mean, he is now. I don't know. Like, if there was somebody that was a major star when they went in to a horror film.
Jamie Lee Curtis.
For what? Halloween? Nobody knew who the hell
Halloween
she was.
H2O.
Oh, yeah. Of course.
I don't know. I mean, I can't think of a whole lot of horror films where major stars were actually in them. I would say, like, you could probably say Morgan Freeman or something in Seven. That would work, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
He's definitely a major, one of my favorite actors, but he hadn't really done much in a while.
Buster Rhymes.
Yeah, Buster Rhymes.
He was a major actor.
Let's get another question through here. John Smallberries says, I don't get Showtime, so I kind of missed out on the Masters of Horror series, but now they're on Netflix on demand. Says, I watched both of Carpenter's episodes. Cigarette Burns was awesome, and Pro-Life was a little less good, but thought-provoking nonetheless. What do you guys think of these two episodes? And given some money to work with, I really think that Carpenter has the gusto to make kick-ass movies again. What do you think?
Well, we're going to find out. I mean, The Ward is supposedly coming out soon, and it definitely must be coming out if he's making convention appearances. So yeah. As far as those two episodes, though, Cigarette Burns.
I don't even remember Cigarette Burns. I need to go back and watch it. That's been like 5 years ago.
I believe that was the one where isn't Henry Thomas in that one, and he makes the, he watches the movie.
Something about the lost movie. I know that.
I remember liking that one, but not like liking it as much as even the ones in that series. And I really fucking hated Pro-Life. I thought that was ridiculous.
I didn't think Pro-Life was that bad. I mean, it wasn't great or anything, but it's sort of like Assault on Precinct 13, like another Assault on Precinct 13, this time with like the Son of Satan or something.
I just thought that the effects in that episode, and basically the effects in all those Masters of Horror episodes, except for the guys like Argento that actually just used like real practical effects, just really brought that shit down. Like, you couldn't make that believable. There was not enough budget to make that stuff look remotely believable. And really, like, the story in that wasn't great or anything either.
Well, like I was saying, it's pretty much the same, like, basic plot, but they change it up a little bit as Assault on Precinct 13. I mean, there's a holdup, a bunch of guys with weapons on the outside. Only thing on the inside is like a abortion clinic. They're trying to abort the Son of Satan, as I remember. So, let's take another phone call, Uncle Bill. How about that?
Hello, you're on Deadpit Radio. Who's this?
This is Russell Rudder, Peanut Butter.
Oh, shit.
What's going on, Rusty?
Man, y'all motherfuckers is hard as hell, you know what I mean?
I know what you're saying.
Yeah, I was trying to call you son of a bitches on Skype. I was going psychotic. I was a little overboard. I called 27 times, I think.
Yeah, it's been kind of busy. I think Uncle Bill's return to the call-ins is getting the people all riled up.
You know, we're a big fucking deal now. I mean, we've set the standard.
Yeah, well, I've seen your guys' penises, because I'm like, I don't know. I haven't really. I don't know. I didn't have a punchline.
Have you been?
What are you guys doing, man? Kicking ass, taking names, taking calls?
Taking calls, pretty much.
Yeah, I'm
drinking some Heineken.
Are you drinking again?
I'm off the wagon, fuck life.
Yeah, we actually, speaking of which, yeah, we got that drunken commentary for Hostel, one of your favorites. So you'll have to check that out this weekend.
Drunk?
We are. We're drunker than fuck.
We were.
Are you kidding? Jesus Christ, I can't wait to hear that shit. Yeah, I've just been working and shit. I gotta be honest, I haven't been keeping up with Dick. I'm fucking so self-consumed. I just worried I'm going to credit debt. I don't even know what horror movies are out. Fangoria dicked me off in their last magazine. They're like, your subscription's ending after the last magazine we sent you, and I never got it.
Oh, that's a bunch of bullshit. Sucks. Leave that up to Tony Timpone to do somebody like that.
I always had respect for that guy. Now I'm going to kill his whole character and his soul.
And shit on his belly. How about that?
Yeah, you can buy him a pepperoni pizza full of shit.
That didn't go below someone. I'm just kidding. I don't really have it.
He probably would anyway.
Whoever's responsible for mailing their shit's an asshole.
But
when they're unemployed, I'm going to tell Obama not to give him a fucking handout.
So what else? What else has been going on? Yeah, we've been watching very little, actually.
Yeah. I don't know. For some reason, we're not getting a whole lot of shit anymore. I don't know what the deal is with that, if it's the holiday season and people are like in a crunch because they're not making any money off DVDs.
I don't think there's anything coming out. There's a problem.
Yeah, and there's that, too. But still, the stuff that is coming out, we ain't getting.
Maybe it's the sophistication of your program that's kind of throwing these companies off.
I think it goes over most people's heads. We're like German art films to all these guys.
Yeah, you guys are going to get picked up by either Unearth or Criterion, because you guys speak highly of them. So.
Yeah.
Well, I never expected to get anything from Criterion, and I hope we never do, because I don't want to watch any of that artsy-fartsy shit.
Yeah. Anybody that likes watching Salo is a child-molesting fecal freak. Because no one, you know, it's interesting if you want to watch Shock, but, like, let's get real. If that film's good, you know, I'm an English major. So.
I love the fact, though, that people will defend that film to the fucking, like, end about, like, what the message is behind a lot of that stuff. And that is, like, one of the most vile fucking movies ever.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is what pretentious equals. Somebody reads an article, and then they believe everything the article says, and then they use the person who wrote the article's opinion on the fucking movie. How about this? I'm collecting Salo. I didn't sell it to CD Warehouse because I'm an asshole that thinks I need to have it because it's an exploitation film. That's the only reason I have it. It's not really good.
Right.
The director tried to fuck a young hooker dude, and it's just gay. So, fuck it.
It is. It's like, it's possibly the most gay movie ever made. Or, it's definitely, the most, shit-eating movie.
I actually did hear that was Shit 2's favorite movie, though.
Yeah.
I was gonna say, that son of a bitch would like something like that.
Yeah. He's into that.
He's talking all the trash, he's running in his mouth, and I got a Heineken bottle in my hand, and I'll throw it through a fucking television. And that he's watching, he'll come through it. It'll hit him in his freaking shit-eating mouth. Clear. Yeah, I'm not like bringing a lot of substance to the table.
Yeah.
Yeah, Shit Tooth, I'm sure will get the message though. But anything else like you watch during the holiday season? We were talking to somebody earlier about Gremlins is definitely one that they watch every year for Christmas. What about you?
Gremlins is great. Well, I'm going to have to pop in Silent Night, Deadly Night, because it's easily probably like one of the better slashers of all time. For anybody that, this isn't a gore film, but It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia's little Christmas special had a pretty gory moment in it, so I just thought I'd let everyone know about that. I watched Orphan. It's not really holiday related, but other than that, I mean, I'm just a big advocate for Home Alone, and I'm totally not joshing. That's my fucking movie. And, Gremlins is a timeless classic. I spoke to Ed, and he said he rewatched that, and I talked about how well it holds up. And that's the thing about the 80s. Like, no one's going to talk about a movie, like, not holding up when it's an 80s hot, like, big budget, medium budget, like, classic. Now, if we're talking street trash or something, you know, that's, like, kind of goofy New York fucking horror, but whatever.
I'm
going to step off the booze. Go on.
I think Santa's sleigh is really going to hold up, though, in about 10 years. I think people will be referencing the fuck out of that, talking about, you know, Goldberg spearing everybody at the dinner table.
Fran Drescher. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's just got to be cool.
Yeah. If somebody, like, segues a nanny reference with Santa's sleigh, I'll fucking bust a nut in my fucking tight-ass boxer shorts.
I wish I could reference the nanny, but I got nothing at all. Fucking nothing.
The nanny. Yeah, I'm not sure about that.
Destroy her pussy hole.
Yeah.
And she's not that bad for an older woman. I'm guessing she's about 60 years old by now. She's like Olivia.
Hey, Fran Drescher, if you're out there listening, why don't you let me and the dead boys put one in the cunt, one in the bung, and one in your mouth, you nasty voice bitch.
You probably wouldn't have a problem with that at all, either.
I can't do a Fran Drescher impression. I want to really bad, but I can't. There we go.
I don't think
those
I can.
Boys.
I don't think I can get my voice that deep. Maybe if we had Ed on the line, he could do a he could do a Fran Drescher impersonation.
But
I think Ed would make her pussy hole look like a glazed donut. So more power to Ed. I heard that dude can bust a load.
I don't ever want to know that.
I don't know how you know that.
He is the original gaper maker, though. You realize that.
Gaper maker, videotaper, call up the boys, we're going to rape her, drag that filthy bitch in the living room. That's my song, and Shit Tooth, if you steal it, I'll fucking swipe a box cutter across your fucking trachea, you fecal freak faggot. You want to die? Well, so do I. Come step to the runk. come to the fucking Palladium in Turtle Creek, and I'll put the chrome to your dome and make oodles and noodles out of your brain, you fucking turd-licking fag.
Oh, my God.
Wow. That's pretty impressive,
that
actually.
That is brutal.
The part that got me off track was Turtle Creek, but other than that, it was all like...
Turtle Creek is the place of the G's. We'll squat up on you, shit dudes. We're rolling deep. We got the Gats. We got the Mac-10s. We're doing our thug fizzle.
Well, I don't think... All
right, guys. Happy holidays, and I'm sorry.
All right, man. You too.
You can see you, man.
We'll see you soon.
All right, love you guys.
All right.
Bye.
Bye. He was on a fucking roll tonight.
He was fucking spinning and greening.
So what else do we have over there? Uncle Bill.
Okay. Mustard greens. Have you had the chance to see Chan-Wook Park's First?
No.
I enjoyed it very much. If he continues to make horror films, I'll be anxiously awaiting his next project. Any thoughts on Thirst, on Park, and have you seen any of his previous movies? If so, how were they? I think we've seen, like, all of his previous movies.
Well, we saw his Vengeance trilogy.
any of the ones that you can get around the U.S., but I haven't seen Thirst either.
Yeah, the guy is insanely talented, I'll say that. I mean, I haven't seen Thirst. I don't even like Asian horror movies or Asian movies in general, but his are so good that I watch them. I don't give a fuck.
Yeah, his are just good movies. Like, they cross over any kind of genre, any kind of, like, you know, foreign or domestic or anything like that. Like, they're just really well-made movies. And that whole trilogy is amazing. And if you haven't seen the Vengeance trilogy, definitely go out and get that. I think that Tartan is re-releasing all those. And I think they might be re-releasing them on Blu-ray and shit as well.
Yeah. So we'll have to get those. Next question. Let's get another one here, and we'll take one more phone call because there's a bunch of motherfuckers calling in. Natalie. Ooh, another female. Uncle Bill, another female.
Yeah.
Says, hey, guys. I don't have a question, but I would like to make a comment. I started reading the forums a couple of years ago and enjoy all the information. I was finally able to get broadband and started listening to the show a few months ago. Since then, it has changed the way I watch movies. I've been a horror fan since third grade and usually watch the movies without much thought put into them. However, after listening to your show, I pay more attention to the music, actors, picture quality, etc., and I've been wearing out my Netflix with all the suggestions I get from you. Thank you for all you do, Natalie, also known as Rob N.T.
Well, that's very nice of you, Natalie. We appreciate that. I'm glad that we can actually make changes in some young person's life.
That's right. Because you know what we like to say all the time when we do the phone-in portions.
Put your hand in my hand and our voices will be heard. And together we could take on all the world
with pure, unadulterated violence
and evil.
Last phone call. Hello, you're on Dead Pit Radio with Creepy Kentucky and Uncle Bill. Who's this?
Hey, this is Jason Triple X.
Hey,
y'all?
What's going on, brother?
How are you, sir?
Hey, man, not much. I've been doing fine. Been doing great. Hey, y'all are getting real popular these days. It's hard to get into y'all.
Well, I'm glad you got through. Yeah, it's been a busy night tonight. Some weeks are more busy than others. So.
Yeah, I called in a couple of weeks ago, but I had 2 weeks in a row there. I tried to call in, couldn't get in. I thought, man, it's getting harder and harder. But, yeah, I got in today. Got lucky.
Cool.
So how y'all been?
We've been good, man. We've just been chilling out here in Kentucky. The weather's...
I'm in a festive Christmas spirit. It's about 25 degrees here.
Really?
Yeah.
Are you giving away free Dead Pit shirts or anything like that? Are you that festive?
We're not that festive, no.
Oh, okay, sure. That's going to be that way. All right.
But Joe from FastCustomShirts.com was awful festive and sent us two of a kind Dead Pit hoodies so we can, you know, be warm.
Oh, wow.
The holidays.
And he was giving away shirts on the Saturday Nightmares chat as well.
I've yet to do the Saturday Nightmares chat. I've got to do that one day.
Yeah, if you're ever up for staying, you know, on a chat room for about 5 or 6 hours, then
that's a place to be.
Hell, sometimes J Dog up in Canada will host the late night, you know, Saturday Nightmares, and I think one night he stayed up until about 8 o'clock Eastern time in the morning.
Crazy.
So that's insane.
I realize this is a special evening. Bill is there for once.
Yeah, I think
Bill,
this
making a rare in-studio appearance.
I think this will probably be the way it'll be from now on, though. I think I'll be taking calls all the time now.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. Well, that's actually got fired from the elementary school. We didn't say that.
Yeah.
I'm getting kind of a weird feedback, y'all. So if something, you hear something, it's, or I don't hear you, something's up with the phone here. But
okay.
Anyway, hey, I wanted to, I was presently surprised when I got on the Dead Pit YouTube channel today. You actually answered one of the questions I was going to call in and ask. And it was about the hostel commentary. I was going to ask y'all, why hadn't y'all done it? Please do it, drunk, high, whatever, one or the other. But I've had a burned copy of a hostel for 2 years now. And I thought, man,
well, that's
good, they didn't do that.
Good for you. I'm glad you didn't buy it.
No, I didn't buy I spent all the money I needed to spend when I went to see it at the theater. So I wasn't going to buy a copy. And I thought, you know what? I got a program that'll burn them. So I said, I'll go rent it and burn it. So I spent another $3. So, you know, that's all they got out of me. I thought I'd get at least that much enjoyment from the commentary. So
yeah.
I was really looking forward to it. And then y'all just left me hanging, man. That sucked. So,
well, we
finally decided to do it. What made y'all to finally go ahead and do it?
Well, I mean, a lot of it has to do with our schedule. You know, and because we're going to be out of it, you know, we were going to get really fucked up. That was the plan. So we wanted to make sure we didn't have anything planned on either side to where we could just, after it's done, we could just
could
go
recover from the hangover.
Yeah. Go in there and pass out, you know. And believe it or not, now this one's probably coming next week. We actually did a really drunken commentary after Hostel. We did one for the Fog.
What?
The Fog remake.
There's drunk.
I saw that on the table in the video, and I thought, what the fuck are they doing with that on the table? I said, did they watch that, or were they planning on doing it? You know, I didn't know, but I noticed it when you were abusing the Hostel DVD.
Yeah,
there's
drunk to the point where you're buzzing and you're actually like,
right,
you're pretty witty and your inhibitions
are
down.
Yeah, just having fun.
Yeah, that's the Hostel one. The Fog one is the point where you're just so fucking drunk that you're just basically making like one syllable, you know, grunts and comments.
I expect that probably won't last but about 5 minutes, and then you'll hear a bunch of, oh, and just turn it off from fucking
it's just,
disgust.
It's pure fucking chaos throughout that comment. There's nothing there.
I can imagine.
But I mean, it was a lot of fun, and it's something that we'll probably try to do one or two of these a year. We're not going to do it that often because I think it would probably wear out its luster, because we don't really drink at all normally. So,
right.
This is just something that we did because people wanted us to do a commentary. You know, people have asked us for years to do one, and I'm like,
I really
don't want to watch this movie again.
Forward to it.
But we were willing to watch it fucked up. So,
well, I have one other question concerning the show or whatever. There was something I wanted to suggest. I think.
Hello. I think we lost him, Uncle Bill. I think we lost him.
I've heard that happen a couple times, but normally the people just fade back in.
Yeah, that's bizarre.
He had another question, though,
He did.
Do you remember what his number was?
I don't think it shows unknown number, unfortunately.
Okay. That's going to haunt me for the rest of my life, though.
One more question.
I won't know what that question is now.
Well, if we see another unknown number call in, then we'll answer it.
Okay.
But,
okay, let's go ahead and read this one from Id Kid. Id Kid says, been listening for 3 years now, and while I sometimes get behind, I always eventually get caught up. I wanted to let you know that there is a problem with the first part of the Sanchez-Myrick episode when trying to download it via iTunes. He's got blah, 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 blah. He was able to download it, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, we don't run iTunes. That's Rob Scott's deal.
You get on Rob Scott's ass.
You leave us alone.
Okay. He wants to know, how do our numbers compare with the numbers from downloads from sites like iTunes? I have no idea.
You have to contact our meteorologist, Jim Caldwell. But I don't know. I don't keep track of that shit.
Yeah, that really is like, we have no control over that stuff whatsoever.
I know that our show reaches millions and millions of horror fans all across the world.
It showed us.
Yeah. Still no unknown number, but yeah, Jason Triple X, a really cool guy.
You go ahead and read the next one and I'll watch.
Okay. Deep Red Massacre. He wants to insult us a little bit. He called us a pair of testicles. He says, we've finally done it. After listening to your show for about 3 years and being a member of the board for about two, I'm finally reduced to posting on this damn thing. I guess that thread, whatever. And Deep Red Massacre, if you've been a member of the message board for 2 years, I don't remember you ever post before. Do you? I don't remember that screen name. But he says, I tried to call in countless times to no avail and had decided that maybe you had a thing against Mainers, that when that dude from Bangor got on three fucking times. So it must be personal then. Now the gloves must come off. Blah, blah, blah. He says, I'm renouncing my dead pit faith, Uncle Bill.
Oh,
he's
God,
lost
no.
his faith.
No. He's lost his smile and his faith.
So he says, no, I can't do that. I love the show too much. I just wanted to say that the feedback interview from last week was awesome. And truthfully, those kind of shows are my favorite. Who needs some big name guest telling the same story for the millionth time when they can have an uber fan of the genre telling it how it is? And you guys are the stars of the show anyway. I've been telling people that for years.
Yeah, the thing about it is, I actually agree with that. I think that those shows are my favorites to listen to and to do. It's just, it depends. There are certain times when we've done shows with a celebrity, and the one that comes to mind immediately is John Carpenter, where he'll tell something that, like, nobody ever knew. And that was the stuff about Rob Bottin, you know, being coked up and stuff while he was doing the effects work on the thing.
And plus, you know, a lot of people that do interviews don't have any fucking balls to ask questions like, you know, the thing from, I know we were asking him about and sort of joking with him a little bit about the Big Trouble in Little China music video, which nobody else had the balls to do. The pro wrestling stuff, you know, with Roddy Piper and all that. So, you know, when we get a big interview, we try to at least ask questions that no one else has asked before and do things like that. So,
yeah, and that's the payoff to a lot of those interviews, is that no matter how many times somebody like that has been interviewed, there's always a chance that you'll be able to ask something and get some sort of information that, you know, nobody else has ever gotten, and it makes that kind of thing worthwhile. But normally, though, I do enjoy doing the interviews with people who are huge fans of the genre, who have basically dedicated, like, their life or a large portion of their life to the genre, who really know their shit and, like, have opinions on the stuff. And there's nothing worse than doing an interview with somebody where you can just tell that they don't really have anything to say about a particular project or, you know, anything like that. Or especially when they don't have anything to say about the horror genre in general, because you can tell they just got into it because it was a job, which happens all the time.
And he has another question. Which of these Euro schlocksters do you guys prefer, Joe D'Amato or Jess Franco?
I would take D'Amato over Franco 100 times. I fucking hate Jess Franco, man.
Well, Joe D'Amato, now, did he do Burial Ground? Was that his?
Shit. I don't know. I know he did Anthropophagus.
I know D'Amato did, like, at least one or two movies that I like. Jess Franco never did anything that I like, so I'd probably say
he did, I think he did Beyond the Darkness. Was that one, too?
Oh, that movie sucked.
Did you see it?
Yeah.
That's the one that's in one of those packs over there.
Bio Omega.
I actually
like
that one, yeah.
Well, fuck you, then. But that's all I've got for fan questions. What about you?
I actually got one here from Cthulhu for you, who says, where can I hear that Star Wars bit that Feedback was talking about on the last show where they were tearing into the prequels? He says, I went to the site but couldn't find it. Here's what you do.
Look, buddy.
I'm going to give you I've got it here. It's www.cinephobia-radio.com/vault.htm. That's where he stores all of the past episodes of Cinephobia Radio, and it's under the title Assault and Battery, the Star Wars prequels, and I believe Slippy is on that one with him. So you go to that website and check it out.
And this segment of Dead Pit Radio is brought to you by Kraft Dinner.
Once again, yeah, by Tim Hortons and Kraft Dinner.
So thanks to everybody for calling in. Apologize to Jason XXX for the cutoff, but hey.
Yeah.
We can only do so much. These programs sometimes fuck up, but
I don't know what happened, but yeah, we're sorry about that. I'd love to know what the other part of the question is.
Yeah, Uncle Bill, though, will be back every week from here on out, but we won't be in here next week because it is Christmas. You know, we do have to celebrate Christmas, unlike Adam Beck, who has sold his soul to Muhammad, right? Is it Muhammad?
Is it Ali? No, that's Muhammad
Allah.
Ali. Allah. Okay. Yeah. He sold his soul to somebody.
Look, buddy, Adam Beck, I'm going to be enjoying myself on Christmas. I'm going to be eating some barbecue ribs just for you. There you go. So, but
we'll be opening Christmas presents, eating barbecue sandwiches.
Oh, my God, this steak
is fucking good over here. I can't stand it.
Now, here's what we'll be doing. We'll be getting barbecue ribs and wrapping them in bacon to eat them.
And Santa's going to be feeding them to us. How about that?
Anyway, we will be back. You actually have a another segment of a few of my favorite things.
Woo!
And that'll be coming up. And we actually have DVD reviews and announcements. This is going to be a jam-packed show, but we're going to try to cram it all in to a nice little three-hour pluff package, baby. Here on DeadBeat.com.
Just when you thought it was safe to look at the calendar again, comes Saturday the 14th. The year's number one horror comedy spoof. Richard Benjamin and Paul Prentice inherit a spooky old house and drive the local vampires bats. If you thought it was bad on Friday the 13th, get ready for Saturday the 14th. Your chance to laugh at everything that ever scared you. Rated PG, parental guidance suggested. Oh.
So hello, folks. This is Uncle Bill talking.
Hello.
And this is a few of my favorite things, which is the only, I'm only going to be doing this during the holidays.
This will be the last one, then.
Yeah, around Christmas time. And this is just a brief collection of a few of favorite things. And this week, it's going to be Christmas movie kill scenes. These are going to be some of our favorite Christmas movie kill scenes.
I only have like three or four.
Okay, I've got four. I couldn't make five, but these are the four. I came up with these four.
We probably have the same one.
Within like 30 seconds, I came up with these four.
Let's go one, one, one.
Okay, we'll go four then. Number four. Start with number four. The sorority girl being smothered to death with a plastic bag.
Oh, goddamn it. That was one of mine.
In Black Christmas.
That was one of mine.
See, folks, that really sets the tone for that whole movie. And it's like the most iconic thing about that movie, really.
Well, the cool thing about it is it comes totally out of nowhere. Because I think the girl's packing up, getting ready to go home, you know, for the holidays. And she hears a noise up in the attic, right? And just all of a sudden, this fucker just runs out and...
Ah! You know. Yeah. It's just... The image of her, like, she's rocking back and forth in the rocking chair with that bag over her head.
Yeah.
That is classic. Never done better. Okay, number three.
Let's talk about Linnea Quigley getting impaled by deer antlers in Silent Night, Deadly Night.
I actually had that one as well. Mm. You cannot not have that on your top list of Christmas movies.
Yeah, that's like really creative. And I love the visuals in that too, where you just saw the shadow of her getting impaled there. It was awesome.
Yeah, plus she's naked. And by the way, not only is she naked, she answers the door.
Naked.
At a top.
Yeah, look at my titties. But if I had titties like that, yeah, I'd fucking walk out in the street.
Well, she does, basically. I mean, she does everything but moonwalk. So that one was a classic. I'm going to go with, for number two, the old bat that gets slung from her motorized wheelchair in Gremlins. I just think that's one of the funniest
Mrs. Deagle.
Scenes. Yeah. So she's at the bottom of her steps. She's got this little wheelchair thing that, like, carries her up her steps. And the Gremlins get in there and mess around with it. And it just basically slings her up through her window out the top of
and
the
then
window.
And then they only have some sort of, oh, that she's going in there. That's great. That's great. Staying with Gremlins, there's another one that I really liked in Gremlins just because it's so fucking gross. But I always loved it as a kid. A gremlin getting obliterated in a microwave. That was just so awesome.
That is one of the better ones, too. So... For number one,
I think I've got this.
I don't know what you've got.
Okay.
But I just got two words for this one. This is not, I don't even know if this takes place on Christmas, but it is a Christmas movie.
Mm.
And those two words for my number one is Garbage Day.
That wasn't a death scene.
What the fuck are you crazy? He shoots the guy right through the fucking trash can.
Well, not when he said it, though.
He comes up to him, says garbage day, then shoots him as he's holding his trash can.
Oh, I need to watch that movie again, I guess. Well, the one that I've got on here that you didn't mention was from Silent Night, Deadly Night as well, was the sled scene.
Oh, that was an awesome scene, too. I thought about putting that as number five on here, but I thought
decapitation.
That'd be a little bit too much Silent Night, Deadly Night, I thought.
Well, fuck, that ain't a whole... That's the thing. I mean, Silent Night, Deadly Night, that was one of the only movies that was about the kill scenes and stuff as far as the Christmas slashers go. You know, because Black Christmas was more about, you know, just the atmosphere and didn't really have a lot of visual, you know, murdering in it.
It had some luscious murders in it, though. Yeah, so Silent Night, Deadly Night 2. By the way, if you haven't seen Silent Night, Deadly Night or Silent Night, Deadly Night 2, those are the best Christmas horror movies
ever made. What about Silent Night, Deadly Night 5, The Toymaker?
Well, hopefully, you can go pick up 3, 4, and 5 now from Lionsgate. So you can get those now and watch them.
Yeah, you can go pick it up too because they ain't sent it to you.
They won't send it to me.
But these were a few of Uncle Bill's favorite things and mine as well.
Yeah, so those are your Christmas movie kills, a few of my favorite things. Have a happy holiday, everybody. Goodbye.
They need a good...
Jimmy, are you okay?
Well, Mom, I'm looking at all these horror sites, but I want one that kills.
Killer Reviews is the place to be for horror, science fiction, and fantasy.
Oh. Killer Reviews.
I'll be right back.
Horror reviews, interviews, a killer podcast in a form for freaks like
Killer Reviews. Killer Reviews.
Bye.
So there you have it, Jimmy. KillerReviews.com has everything you need. Jimmy? Jimmy? Jimmy!
Hey everybody, this is Jim Van Bever, the director of Deadbeat at Dawn, My Sweet Satan, and the Manson Family, and you're listening to Dead Pit Radio.
Howdy everybody!
Hi!
It's the Creepy Kentuckian back once again, and we appreciate everybody for calling in on the call-in portion. That was a really active call-in. There's a lot of people that tried to get through that couldn't get through. But sometimes it's like that, Uncle Bill, and sometimes it's not. So the best way to, if you definitely want to get on a show, is call like a fucking madman every week. But not next week, because we're off. It's Christmas.
Here's what you do. Get yourself two cell phones, an iPhone, and then go down into a payphone. Call them all at the same time. Uh-huh. All of them at the same time. Uh-huh. And then in 1 minute intervals from each one, you might be able to get in.
Might be able to. So, yeah, like I said, we're not going to be here on next week's show. I don't know if we'll have anything show-related planned. I know that Dead Pit is going to make a special appearance, I believe, next week on ST3B's Eurocult on mypodcast.com. So we will be on that. That was a pre-recorded number about giallos. So you can go to eurocult.mypodcast.com. And check all that stuff out right now, and our show will probably be up on Christmas Day.
Yeah, and we got to say, though, that Steve does a really good job with the Eurocult stuff. He's probably the most knowledgeable Euro trash person that you'll ever run into. He knows all about the Giallos and all about everything else that came out of any kind of European city around that time. So listen, enjoy, give him some feedback. It'll be us on there. It's going to be awesome. We're branching out. We're going to end up on Cinephobia or Rue Morgue or one of those stations here shortly.
We were already on Rue Morgue a couple of years ago,
yeah.
Uncle Bill.
We're going to be back.
Also, though, definitely got to put this over, and I know that we're going to have this video up on their YouTube channel on Christmas Day. The second annual Chester Grimm Christmas Special. And there's actually a video on YouTube right now. Dig Up a Corpse This Christmas by Chester Grimm, and it's fucking, it's insanely popular already. It's one of the hottest videos on YouTube.
It has to be though, man, because it's seriously one of the catchiest songs. Like once you listen to it, you will find yourself actually singing Dig Up a Corpse This Christmas over and over.
Yeah. So.
So yeah. And the, you gotta admit too, the, last holiday special was fucking great.
Yeah, it was.
Like, really entertaining.
It really was good. So you'll definitely want to check out the Dead Pit YouTube page. Dead Pit. Just search for Dead Pit on YouTube and you will find it. And also, one of the things that I know a lot of people, Jason X was calling in earlier and mentioned that he's been waiting for this for a while. It is finally here. The Hostile Drunken Commentary is available for purchase now. $2.99 is all it is. And we let about 30 people listen to the last 10 minutes of it on Saturday Nightmares last week. And people were really marking out for it. That's all I can say. I mean, I think that exactly what we wanted to be recorded sort of was. I mean, it actually ended up even better than what we could have expected just because of the random madness that's in that.
Yeah, the best part about it is we weren't really even trying to be funny. We were just so drunk that we didn't care.
Yeah, I know Uncle Bill's speech is pretty slurred.
It is. So. It is. Yeah.
It's pretty hilarious as well. So you definitely appreciate you guys checking that out. And I will try by next week so you guys will have some stuff to do on Christmas. If, you know, I know Brian Washer, our good buddy Wash, is spending Christmas alone for the second year in a row. And I feel sorry for him, Uncle Bill.
As do I.
Yeah. So, he's going to have some stuff to purchase from deadpit.com, though. We'll have commentaries available and, you know, free videos to watch if he wants to watch those. So, you know, if you're similar to our good buddy Brian Washer, then we'll have stuff planned for you at Dead Pit. We won't leave you completely out. But as far as the actual show goes, we're not going to do a show next week.
No, that would be wrong.
But we do need to make the big announcement on the New Year's show, which I don't think, you know, we probably won't be able to take phone calls on that show just because when we'll be doing it throughout the week, we won't be doing it on Thursday. But as far as interview goes, yeah, I mean, this is one that that you guys have really asked for on the message board for a couple of years now. And, you know, we were told that the guy just doesn't do interviews. You're not going to get him to do an interview. He agreed to do the interview, Uncle Bill. Tell him about it.
Yeah, we recently reviewed one of his early films. We've always wanted to have him on the show ever since I can remember seeing, you know, the Manson family. This is, of course, Jim Van Beber. That's right. Legendary independent filmmaker Jim Van Beber, from Deadbeat at Dawn to the Manson family to music videos. To,
Pantera stuff.
Yeah, horror in general, the state of the genre right now, independent films. It's going to be a two-part interview.
Yeah.
It's extensive. We're talking about everything, you know, from the stuff that happened on the set of the Manson family to, you know, his thoughts about anything and everything, really.
Independent films today.
Yeah.
You know, just a really, really in-depth interview with the guy and, you know, a great interview as well. I'll say this, one of the favorites of mine last little bit, the ones that we've done. I think that the people will be really pleased with this. Just because, you know, he's one of those guys that I don't know if he's even still to this day gets the recognition that he deserves for those movies because, you know, in my opinion, how you can tell a great director or how you can see that the guy's a great director is he can take shit you know, which is what he's given in a lot of these movies, and turn it into a bowl of ice cream, you know. He can make something out of nothing. And that's what he did with Deadbeat at Dawn and the Manson family. I mean, it's amazing. So, you know, and hopefully this will get a lot more people interested in seeing, or a few, you know, that listen to our show, interested in seeing this guy's stuff, because he's a really talented filmmaker, and hopefully he'll be making more films.
Yeah, we've had several people request him, and at least one person that really, really wanted, you know, to hear an interview with him, and he had talked to him before, and this is it. This is, you know, two parts.
Bring it to you in two parts.
Yeah, like I said, if you haven't seen his work before this interview, I suggest that you go and watch it before you see or before you listen to the interview. If you haven't by the time we do the interview, then chances are listening to him talk about this stuff will make you want to see it anyway, and you'll go out and watch it. Yeah. So do that now, Jim Van Bever.
Yeah, January 1st, 2010. It's going to be a Van Bever New Year.
Yeah, trust me, it really is.
All right, so what we have planned now, Uncle Bill, is let's get into the reviews. I guess the first one we could talk about is another collection of trailers, TV spots, stuff like that. It's a 3-disc edition brought to us from Shockorama from the Bloody Earth Films division, which actually released a little film we were in called Stash, which has become unbelievably popular. I don't know why exactly. I mean, it's a good movie and everything, but
I mean, we were the leads. Yeah, that's probably why.
Yeah, that was why they heard we were in it. But Stephen Romano, who did he do a series of books or something like that? Or the name sounds familiar, but
he is somehow I think he was a producer, mm-hmm. maybe a writer of some. I don't know. His shit's on there somewhere.
Yeah,
probably should have researched it a little bit better.
Yeah, we don't do too much research here on Dead Pit, but I mean, this is a huge, comprehensive set, and the third disc, which is going to be of a lot of use to us here on this radio show, is a special bonus MP3 disc that includes hundreds of radio spots, you know, drive-in stuff. It's amazing. Actually, over 300, it says on here. So we will be playing those at some point. And but, I mean, pretty much what this set is, the only difference between this and the 42nd Street Forever series is they actually produced a few fake trailers on this one, and that sort of differentiates it a little bit from the other ones. And I think it's in a really cool package as well. It'll probably sell really well if it's actually out in stores.
Well, yeah, if you're not familiar with the 42nd Street Forever stuff, that's basically where they take a bunch of grindhouse trailers and put them all together, and somebody will do a commentary over them. And this one, it's Stephen Romano himself, and in an alternate commentary, Uncle Creepy. But the Stephen Romano one I thought was really good, because not only does he tell stories about the films as far as what, you know, what in the trailers and stuff, he also just tells stories of people that he's met over the years that may have been involved with the films, and his own personal experiences with, you know, some of these people, and it's just really, really fascinating stuff. Also, like, I think besides the radio spots and the trailers, there's like a huge compilation of TV spots on the second disc too. And he's put, I think they've been remastered in this set.
Yeah,
too.
Looked like it. I mean, the trailers actually look pretty decent on this. But the thing is, like, the trailers, a lot of stuff I saw on there wasn't stuff I was familiar with at all.
No, and that's the great part about listening or watching this stuff.
And most of these movies have never hit DVD either. I mean, they don't look like movies that would sell too well on DVD.
No, not at all. As far as the fake trailers, like, I got a huge kick out of watching those because, well, I got a huge kick out of watching them in Grindhouse, you know, when they let Eli Roth and Rob Zombie and them go crazy. I just like to watch people make that kind of stuff and attempt to recreate, you know, those old themes and, you know.
And they even had sequels for a couple of the movies as well, the fake trailers. So.
Right. There was some stuff for, like, Argento films. They redid, like, Giallo trailers and made those. Slasher trailers. Just bizarre stuff, but it really, really came across well, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, some of the stuff that's on here, I mean, the fake trailers, some of these, Dark Knight of the Demon House, Dead Bugs on the Carpet, which actually has, like, they do have fake one-sheet posters, too, that you can highlight when you click on the...
Right, that's Four Flies on Grey Velvet was what that was ripping off.
Right. But there's a lot on here, like, you know, as far as the TV spots and stuff, you'll have Grizzly Pieces, Horror Hotel, Invasion of the B-Girls, Massacre at Central High, a lot of stuff, Last Starfighter, or Last Survivor, sorry about that. And the MP3 disc, like, I actually looked at that. That is insane. And all those sound amazing, too. Like, they must have got the original audio, the audio tape or something, and remastered it because it sounds great. And, you know, I actually, now here's the thing that I didn't, now I didn't listen to Stephen Romano's. I actually listened to Uncle Creepy.
Uh-oh.
Here's the problem. Uncle Creepy was ragging on all these movies, making fun of them, which is fine. I mean, he's a pretty funny guy. He just was by himself, though. Like, it doesn't, it's not as effective. Like, 42nd Street Forever, they have a group of three or four people on there. Well, let's just say three, because one of them never talks, the fucker from Fangoria.
Yeah, and actually, like, the best one to me was the Alamo one, where they had all the guys from the Alamo Draft yeah. House.
But, I always like the group commentaries if you're going to rag on a movie. It's fun, or like, it's more fun like that. I mean, by himself, it just doesn't work as well. I'm guessing that's something he did really off the cuff because he didn't know a whole lot about the movies, just making fun of them more than anything else, which, let's face it, a lot of them deserve to be made fun of.
Yeah, but I don't know how it is, like, that he got a hold of a lot of this stuff and had it remastered, but, it's a pretty amazing set for somebody like, you know, Camp Motion Pictures to come out with. And I was looking on here. Stephen Romano is actually the screenwriter for Masters of Horror. He was the screenwriter for the Showtime series. And he wrote the B-movie book, Shock Festival.
Oh, okay.
So that's actually where this comes from, I suppose. But, I enjoyed this. To be honest, I enjoyed it just as much as I enjoy the 42nd Street Forever stuff.
Well, I like the 42nd Street Forever commentaries a lot, and I like the guys they have. Like, I know Ed Samuelson's on there, and he's a real, like, buddy, you want to talk to somebody that knows every fucking thing about grindhouse movies, cult movies. That guy knows, he probably know about every one of those on there. He's probably seen them. And, you know, other guys. I'd like to see Felcher do one like that, because
I tell you another thing about this that I absolutely love that you'll never see in, like, Lionsgate or any big studio do is the packaging. Like, it came with a nice size poster,
booklet,
inserts, all kinds of shit. Yeah, and it has like a nice little
It's a sweet package is the cool thing too. I mean, I don't know how much they're going to charge for this, but yeah, I mean, they really did this one justice in my opinion. So I would, highly recommend you guys checking this out. If you're a fan of the 42nd Street Forever, it's more of the same stuff. They actually, I don't remember seeing a whole lot of trailers on there that were on the 42nd Street Forever. So
no, they really don't. They don't cross over at all.
Yeah, so it's pretty cool. And it's a three-disc set. Like I was saying, radio spots. To me, that's like fucking gold. That's like striking gold, you know.
And the funny thing is, I didn't even think about that at all when I got that. But, yeah.
Yeah. But, you'll definitely want to check out Shock Festival from Bloody Earth Films. And is that already out, or do you know?
I've got the press release, but I do not know.
You suck.
I think it is, because it was just reviewed by a couple other sites, too.
So you'll definitely want to get your mitts on that. Up next is a movie that we definitely, it's been a delay of reviewing this, but we were always going to review it. Our buddy Robert Elkins, who brought us the Backwoods movies, which I like. I really love those movies a lot.
Yeah.
And Zomthology, which I don't know what's up with that. That's actually a movie that was planning on getting distribution, and it won some awards, I think, at Fright Night last year and stuff like that. Really good, really cool anthology movie. That's also a zombie movie.
Yeah, but this one is Psychopath.
Yeah.
And this is probably going to be the easiest review I've ever done, because this movie is... It's almost like, I don't think this is true, but it's almost like Elkins watched Laid to Rest, like right before he decided to do this movie, because it really does, like, it starts with a woman out in the woods, unconscious. She wakes up, she starts running, finds a house, and mm-hmm. she's killed by a psychopath.
And that's it.
And that's, I swear to you, that is it.
Then it's just like random people after random people yeah. being killed.
And then you find out that his dad is, not to give anything away, but his dad is like driving around picking up these women and dropping them off in the middle of the woods after I guess they've been drugged or knocked unconscious. He just drops them off and like he lets his son, who's a psychopath guy with a hood on, mm-hmm. kill him.
Yeah.
So he kills one of them, and she, something about she leaves her cell phone, and her sister tries to get in contact with her and can't get in contact with her. So she comes out and sends out like it's her and a couple of friends, and they go looking, and they stumble upon the property, and everybody gets massacred.
Violently. Yeah, I sort of like the gore scenes in this was really good. Like, he did a great job with the gore scenes, and he does all the makeup effects himself. I don't know if you knew that or not.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. The only thing is, like, I don't know how quick he did this. Maybe he did this really quick. Maybe he made this movie really quick. But it didn't even seem like he even attempted to tell a story in this. Like, it was just straight on, full steam ahead, chopping, killing, violence, gore. And a lot of people, that's what a lot of people want. And in that respect, like, it did have some cool scenes in the woods. And he's really good at that, actually, for shooting low-budget movies. I just wish there was a little bit more of a, you didn't even have a group of people to tell the story around, really. I mean, to follow the movie around. It was just like one or two people here and there.
Now, you'd follow somebody for about 5 minutes and they get killed.
Yeah. But there's not like, it's not the traditional way in that there's just a group of people going somewhere. It's like one person at a time getting killed, and maybe the bar sequence.
I think he's actually the bartender in the movie, yeah. too. And that's pretty funny. He actually has a pretty good scene in that where he's talking to somebody on the phone, you know.
Yeah.
But it's like, the guy just shows up random, like he shows up at the fucking bar. Like here's this, like, supposedly, I guess he's like a mutant Mongoloid type of killer.
I don't know if you noticed this or not. I don't know what they made the mask out of, but what it looked like to me, and I may be wrong, but it just looked like it to me, like the killer had a Jason mask on, and then over that, they put like a tight hood, because his mask was shaped like a Jason mask or something. And they put, like, the hood over it that covered it up.
I guess that could have been it.
Maybe that was it. I don't know. I like the movie. I'm a fan of slasher movies. I think the Backwoods movies were better movies. Both of them were better movies. They were more fun. But he did improve quite a bit with the gore shots and, the makeup effects in general. I think he did a really great job on that. It's uber gory, uber violent, and slasher fans, if you're a hardcore slasher fan, you won't be disappointed in it, I don't think,
as far as
gore goes.
Like right now, I should be like Captain Spaulding, like, hey kids, do you like violence? it's really what you can say about it. I mean, it's just one scene after another of people getting killed. And it's a slasher movie. Really good effects. For an independent film, really, really good. You know, makeup effects and stuff like that. If you like that, if you do not give one single shit about any, like, character or what's going on in a story, then you'll love this movie. Because that's what it is.
That's why I was telling Jerry Hoare that he would love it. Because I actually heard him saying that he liked Wrong Turn 3, which, in my opinion, oh, God, I don't even want to get started on that. But if you don't give a fuck about the character development or any characters in general, you just want to see a killer hacking and slashing and in creative ways as well, then Psychopath is for you. And I do love the artwork for Psychopath. I gotta say, it was similar to a very close slasher to me in my heart. So I do have to give him credit where that's concerned. And I'm always a fan of seeing what Robert Elkins does, because I consider him a close friend of the show. He's the only, him and Tim Gross are the only two guys that have been to every Fright Night Film Fest since we've been. So, you know, was a close-knit thing there. It's too bad that Robert Elkins gets so fucking drunk at these shows we can't really talk to him.
Yeah, by the time that we're done,
that motherfucker's drunk as soon as we get there.
By the time we're done behind the tables, his ass has already passed out somewhere. So, yeah.
But as a favor to Robert Elkins, we need to debut as we close out this show, Uncle Bill. That'd be the best way to debut it. Well, you want to say anything else about Psychopath, though, before we...
I think I've said what needed to be said.
I love y'all! So we're going to debut the theme song, the closing song, the credit song in Psychopath by myself and Uncle Bill. And we will see you guys, like I was saying, Jim Van Bever on Dead Pit Radio, January the 1st, 2010. Y'all have a Merry Christmas, Happy New Year. And, you know, we love each and every one of you pitomaniacs and hope you guys get all you wanted for Christmas and then some. So until then, I'm the Creepy Kentuckian.
I am Uncle Bill. Have a very special holiday, folks.
Merry Christmas, motherfucker. You don't say holiday.
Look, I'll say whatever the fuck I want.
Give me a hug, Uncle Bill. It's okay. Christmas.
Happy Kwanzaa.
So, here it is. The Psychopath theme song brought to you by DeadBit.com.
Lord of the forest, stalking all the bitches.